I'm very pleased to announce that it's 7:30 and we have a quorum. Please take your seats. Okay. I'm calling this meeting to order. My name is Myron Fox, and it's my privilege to be your moderator again tonight. I declare a quorum present. Coffee and snacks are being provided this evening by Girl Scouts Troop 72460, which does a lot of community service in town. Reminder to please turn off your cell phones and any other audible devices. When you're recognized to speak, please give your name and address clearly each time you speak in order to ensure an accurate record of the proceedings. And just make sure you hold the mic, whether you're here at the podium or in the audience, make sure you hold the mic fairly close to your mouth when you speak so we all can hear you. All motions to amend must be delivered to me and the town clerk and the folks to Viewgraph in writing before they are made to the hall. You may email them to Mark Thompson in advance as soon as you know you wish to make an amendment. He's at infosystems@sudbury.ma.us. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows to my left and right in the rear. I remind the hall and presenters that each presenter has a maximum of 10 minutes, and the timer will ring at 5 minutes for everyone's information. Speakers have a maximum of 5 minutes. Reminding you that there is no hissing, booing, whistling, clapping, or the like before, during, or after the time someone is speaking. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a speaker, presenter, or town official. I am encouraging those of you who don't speak very often at town meeting, or not at all, to speak. Boy Scout Troop 63 tonight, under the leadership of Scoutmaster Ken Chung, are kind enough to have the following Boy Scout runners with the mics: Emmett Alcasab, Tim Dunphy, Dan Stutman, and Caleb Coffin. Does anybody not have a warrant and need a warrant? If so, please raise your hand and we'll have one of the Boy Scouts bring it over to you. Right over here, we need two. Those people who are raising their hands, do you have any? Patty, can you give them some warrants? Okay, let's keep going. Bathrooms are across the hall from the auditorium. Emergency fire exits are at the back of the hall, two doors on either side. And there's two exits on either side, on each side of the stairs to my left and right. League of Women Voters is holding a candidates night for the June 25th special selectmen's race. It is the candidates night. The race is on, of course, the election's on June 25th. And the candidates night is on Wednesday, May 29 at 7:30 p.m. at Goodnow Library. It will be televised live on Sudbury's cable channels and repeated there often. Last night we finished Article 13. Article 14 was passed. Article 14 was passed as part of the consent calendar. Article 15 was withdrawn before the warrant was published. So we begin tonight with Article 16, Police Headquarters. Jim Kelly, Facilities Director, for a motion.
Appropriate the sum of $627,000 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for professional and engineering services relative to the design of a new police headquarters, including a storage building and all other appurtenances thereto, to be constructed on town-owned land on Hudson Road, and all expenses therewith, including preparation of plans, specifications and bidding documents, and borrowing costs, including bond and note issue expense. And to raise this appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the selectmen, is authorized to borrow $627,000 under Mass General Law, Chapter 44, Section 7. All appropriations hereunder to be contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 debt exclusion in accordance with General Law, Chapter 59, Section 21C.
Does that receive a second? It does. Kelly?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jim Kelly. I'm the Facilities Director for the Town of Sudbury, and I will present a portion of Article 16 tonight. Presenting with me will be Selectman Hardy and Acting Police Chief Scott Nix. First, you may be wondering if the motion tonight is different than what you see in your warrant. And the answer is yes. Tonight, we are requesting design funds only. Instead of the $7.5 million request, which would include all design and all construction costs, we are requesting design costs only. This will fund complete building plans, specifications that are ready to go out to bid. These are some of the committees that we have met with. During many of the meetings and at the open house, questions were asked about the final cost and the final site layout. Hearing those concerns and listening to the residents' comments, we felt it best to request design and planning funds only so that we can have better estimates and a final site plan layout and to ensure full participation of all the town residents. So why do we need a new police station? The police station was built in 1960 and added on in 1980. It is simply too small. It does not provide for adequate space for today's police function. The building systems are aging and in risk of failure. The 911 computer system is in an old boiler room. The electrical service is a 200-amp service, smaller than many homes in Sudbury. Why now? The need. The building is still grossly inadequate for present-day functions. This time, though, we have the benefit of a lot of work done by the Blue Ribbon Committee. The Blue Ribbon Committee never got a chance to bring its plans back to town meeting. They, the 13 members, spent a lot of time. They created five different schemes in order to bring a new design that would accommodate the present-day police function. The economy in 2008 stalled the project. However, now is a great time with low interest rates and debt opportunity. So what are the difference from 07? In 07, the town had concerns that the proposal was bigger than necessary, and the cost was more than people felt comfortable with. So the Blue Ribbon Committee analyzed alternatives in order to satisfy those concerns. These are some of the differences from then to now. Why not build it where it is, people have asked. The current site is 0.6 acres. It's not large enough to expand the station. The Hudson Road site has been determined to be the best option, and the location is geographically dead center to the town. It might be hard for you to see, but that little red dot is where the proposed police station headquarters will be located. So what other sites were considered? In 2006, the Permanent Building Committee reviewed sites around town. And since then, other sites have also been reviewed. They all came with costs and limitations. We own the Hudson Road land. It's got the area. It's a great location. It fits nicely in creating Sudbury's public safety campus. What will we do with the current station? I presented the police station proposal a couple weeks ago to the Park and Rec Commission, and they asked the same questions as many others did over the last several months. The answer is no decision has been made yet. A public process will take place. Pros and cons, costs and revenues, needs or opportunities will be addressed. But we do know we have a valuable asset in that police station, appraised at about $850,000. A question was raised recently concerning the square foot cost of the proposed station, and that it was double of what was found online for other police stations. Mike Melnick, co-chairman of the Permanent Building Committee, prepared this comparison and presented it to the Finance Committee last week. This is an apples-to-apples comparison of local stations, similar size, and $2,014 dollars. Selectman Hardy will now talk about some of the financial aspects of this proposal.
So the current article we have on the table is for the design costs only, which is a $627,000 appropriation. We are proposing short-term borrowing only, which would be a five-year bond, $21 on the average tax bill. And design funds can be rolled into the next appropriation if we go for construction funds next year. The budget details for the design phase and project development, you can see the lion's share of it is architectural and engineering fees, some permitting and site survey and supportive permitting, project management costs, some small printing costs, a small contingency, and a conservative estimate of $627,000 for the design appropriation. So the next steps. If the design funds are approved, we'll select a designer by RFP to complete the plans for the Hudson Road site. It'll be a public process, the SHA, the Sudbury Housing Authority, the neighbors, and with a complete and public site plan review. We will have firm construction estimates, and we will go for 2014 town meeting ballot for the construction funds based on those firm construction estimates. Future financial considerations, $7.5 million estimated, and that is an estimate, a not-to-exceed estimate at this point. And that would include the $627,000 for the design. That's the estimate at this point, just so everyone knows what we're looking at down the road. Now, after we do the design and have those firm estimates in hand, we'll have a much better feel for what the real number will be. We expect that larger number, the construction fee, to be bonded over 20 years, which would be about a $90 per year impact on the average homeowner. This shows you the average tax bill impact of debt service only going forward on the average homeowner's tax bill, showing the impact of the police station construction and design costs. And we have a lot of other capital projects in the pipeline that we know about. We've got a roadmap of capital projects that you see here, roofs, Davis Roof, Nixon Roof, Haynes Roof, Loring Roof, heat pumps for the high school, Feely Field, the high school roof, drainage upgrades, walkways, Curtis Roof, Sherman's Bridge, radio systems, the Fairbank Atkinson Center, the police station, and the town offices complex. So you can see the different costs that are in the capital planning pipeline for the town of Sudbury, the major capital costs that are in the pipeline going forward. And if we add all those projects onto the average tax bill, you can see the impact for the debt costs. It's still, it goes up, but it doesn't go up to where we were in the beginning of the 2000s when we were ramping up all those school construction projects. Okay, now I'll turn it over to Acting Chief Nix.
Good evening. So a lot of people have asked why a 14,000, approximately 14,500 square foot building. Is that appropriate size? Is that too small, too big? We believe it's in comparatively speaking, very proper to what other departments have done that are similar in size. I kind of like to liken it to being several buildings underneath one roof. That being that you have the administrative functions, the investigations, detentions, the meeting room slash operations center, as well as the patrol functions. Some people have said that, well, there might only be two or four individuals in the station at a time. That is correct. But it depends on what functions are needed. Obviously, administrative functions during the day. Be myself, Lieutenant Grady, different things, you know, the budgeting part of things. But then the patrol is the meat and potatoes of it, where they're out doing their thing, dispatch, and so forth. They're always occupied. Then you have the detention area. We reduced the detention area from what the Blue Ribbon Committee recommended from 6 cells to 4. And we did that in order to save, to increase other areas, as well as still cover ourselves with being an ADA-compliant cell, a female cell, a juvenile cell, as well as a male cell. Now, 3 of the cells are all the above. They can do whatever, but you still need to have that amount of cells in order to hold the prisoners. Some people brought up the fact that, you know, you only have so many prisoners or so many arrests, and, you know, we only have so many staying overnight. Well, that is correct. We don't always have prisoners staying overnight. But regardless of whether we have prisoners overnight or not, we still need to hold them for an hour, two, three, four, until we can bail them. So we can't just eliminate our cell block. Regional lockups are not in the near future, and not necessarily the most efficient thing. So staffing levels. The FBI indicates that approximately 2.4 officers per 1,000.
Chief, give us some idea of how much longer you need.
Give me 1 minute and we'll wrap it up, sir.
Is that okay with the hall?
Okay. I'll go as fast as I can. So obviously in the slide you see the comparative.
Chief,
comparative speaking
hang on one
so
second.
Forth. What's that?
I want to clarify why you are completely different statistics in your presentation from the...
Excuse me. Sir, you're out of order. You can't just interrupt the speaker. Could you please be seated? We want to treat everyone equally. All those in favor of giving the chief another minute, signify by raising your hands. All those opposed, go ahead, chief.
Okay, thank you, sir. So, again, with the size of the station and so forth, if you flip the next graph, it was about 1 square foot per 1,000 residents. And as you see, as our existing station is very low. If the proposal will still keep us low, but more functional, safer operations, more efficient operation efficiency. Our cell block is separated from our booking room, which influx citizens into the area when they're trying to take reports. We would like to encapsulate that, keep it all in one area. The safety-wise with that is much better, again, to keep the prisoners all right within the cell block. I know that's been a point of contention with people, so we're trying to explain that's a much safer, more efficient operation. We'll just slide through real quick. I had some more to go, but we'll finish up. Some of the design issues for the new station, combined dispatch with the EMD. That's one of the struggles that we've had. We are making it work, and we will continue to make it work, but it would be much more efficient in a newer facility. Interview rooms, detention, we spoke about the regional lockup, way far out, if at all feasible. The meeting meeting and operational center. Something we do not have, you know, with weather-related incidents, that could be very important for us in order to continue providing our public safety functions. Evidence storage is a huge thing right now. I'm sure you're all aware of the labs that had the scandals and whatnot. So we are not allowed to destroy our narcotics evidence anymore. So that just keeps, we're already full, and that just keeps growing more and more. So that's one of the things we're trying to look through for expansion and so forth. Quickly go to the schematic. That's just, they're color-coded to what I try to say, the different buildings underneath the roof. If you go to the next one, the that's the layout, proposed layout of, on the property itself. And then if you go to the last one, it's just a rendition of what we propose that it would look like.
Thank you. We'll now go to the Finance Committee, Mark Manasian.
Actually, Mr. Moderator, this article has changed substantially from what the Finance Committee voted on. So given that we're unable to give an opinion at this point, we'd be happy to caucus on the floor of town meeting, in front of town meeting, and have a deliberation and vote. But the previous vote we took was on a much larger project, and I don't think it's appropriate for us to render an opinion without having some discussion.
Okay. Why don't you fellas caucus, ladies and gentlemen, why don't you caucus over there, and we'll continue with our town meeting. Anyone who wants to listen to the Finance Committee may do so. And in the meantime, we'll ask the Board of Selectmen for their view.
The Selectmen support the article.
Thank you. We'll now have discussion, and we'll go back to the Finance Committee when and if they're able to reach a decision. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 16? Signify by raising your card. There's no need to make an audible sound, sir. Yes.
Stuart Lovell, 58 Hudson Road, Sudbury. Before I start, I do want to question the basis on which this entire, I can't think of the next word, process is occurring, because the warrant has been issued, and now is it legitimate for a completely different proposal to be presented? Is that a good process?
The question is what the amendment asks, what the current motion asks for, is it within the four corners of the warrant article? And the answer is yes. And the reason for that is because the warrant article asked for didn't ask for a number, but asked to construct a new police station. This is for design, which is a much smaller number.
I fully understand that that's a subset. However, that's a completely different proposition. And it's a classic bait and switch. I'll offer a $10 million thing. Oh, by the way, now it's only $500,000.
If your question is that within the four corners of the article, I've answered your question. The answer is yes, it is.
I don't consider that to, because it's a subset, does not make it within the four corners of the article. It's a totally different proposition.
I would suggest that, in any case, I'm asked to make a ruling on it. I've just made my ruling.
Okay. I can only speak, of course, to the original proposal because, guess what, I didn't know about this. So everything I say is about the original $7 million and up proposal. This proposal was ill-conceived the first time round, ill-conceived the second time round, even more ill-conceived this time round. And by the way, I've forgotten your name, sir. You said that the Blue Ribbon Committee did not have the opportunity to bring this back. I believe that's completely and utterly untrue. The town decided to IP this the last time round. How does that constitute them not having the opportunity?
Sir, this is not a question and answer period.
Okay.
You have 5 minutes.
Okay.
I would use it wisely and try to keep to the whether or not we should spend $620,000.
Well, now I can only speak to what I prepared, which was the original proposal.
Sir, you can only speak to the motion in front of the hall.
Okay. Then I'm speaking to the motion in front of the hall. This is ill-conceived this time round, and if it fails this time and it's resurrected yet again by the town sometime in the future, it will probably be ill-conceived then. There's been a great deal of misinformation propagated by the town on this proposal, so I'd like to record a few basic facts. Firstly, the town population, contrary to the impression that the selectmen and the town manager like to portray, the population of Sudbury is declining rather than increasing. 2006, in the town annual report, 18,207. 2011, 18,160. 2012, 18,103. And I can fairly safely guess that it's going to continue to go in that direction. Police department workload. I object, by the way, to the 2.4 comment because Sudbury's own paperwork says 1.9 per thousand. I'll come back to that. Police department workload. The caseload of the Sudbury Police Department is declining, at least by any measure that can be established to manual town reports, and I've done my homework on this. I've got good news and I've got bad news. The bad news is I have a mass of statistics on this topic, and the good news is that in the interest of time, I'm going to spare you all those details. As a proof of the point, the number of staff in the department is static or slightly declining. Note that in the frequently asked questions document produced by the town, there is this statement. The town currently has 29 officers plus dispatchers and administrative personnel, and there are no plans to increase the size of the police force. No plans. But despite that, we're now proposing, in truth, a building, a facility which is three times the current size, not the numbers that these people have been giving you, but I'll get to that if I'm allowed to. So what's the cost? The budget for the 2007 proposal, 18,000 square feet versus 14,500, was 8.2 million. The town crier in January 10th quotes Selectman Hardy as saying that the new plan trims the price by about 1.5 million. So that's easy peasy, okay? 8.2 less 1.5 is 6.7, I think. Not so fast. The Sudbury town crier in February 21st quotes Bill Braun from the Blue Ribbon Committee as saying that the new facility will come in at around 7 million. 2 months later, in the frequently asked questions, the town is estimating that the budget is 7.5 million. Going once, going twice, then advance on 7.5 million. Don't you wish your salary went up as fast and as easily as these budgets do? Let me take a quick look at the current proposal. The town flyer promoting the proposal stresses that this is a no-frills solution. And I won't have the time to find the damn thing. No frills on the front page. So those no frills include a gym, no frills solution. That includes a gym. Do we really need a gym? And it all has to be built to police station code. So this is not an ordinary gym. This is a gym that costs twice what any other ordinary gym will cost. Are the people really going to turn up before their shift and get a workout before they go on their shift? Or maybe they're going to finish their shift and then go to the gym rather than go home. I don't think so. A meeting room for 40 people, no less. Again, built to police station code and in a historic district. So whatever constraints there are for building in a police in a historic district. Do you think that Sudbury may have a room somewhere where you could actually hold a meeting for 40 people? What is the cost of building the building in a historic district? Nobody's ever mentioned this in any fashion. Last but definitely not least, can I have my JPEG? This is just a little dirty secret that the town didn't bother sharing with you. This facility includes a huge storage facility in the back behind the building. You won't find any mention of that in any of these presentations. You'll notice you didn't hear that. Never mentioned. There it is.
Sir? And by Sir? That's the 5 minute. You have 5 minutes to speak, and it's up. So you want to? I'll be glad to tell the hall how much longer you wish to speak for.
Well, I am going as fast as I possibly can, of course.
I just need a number I can give to the hall.
I'll try and finish in, say, 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Hang on a minute. All those in favor of allowing this gentleman 2 more minutes to speak, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, go ahead, sir.
So I can only estimate this by sight. I emailed the selectman saying, what are the dimensions of this building? And to no surprise of mine, at least, I heard nothing back from them. But I guess, by looking at it, that it's about 5,000 square feet. So add that to the 14,500, and we're at 20,000, three times the current size for the same staff. The obvious solution here is to build a building, a brick building, on a sensible site on Route 20, free of all the constraints of building in a historic district, and to build only a building that provides core facilities, and if necessary, build an annex in the future, which has such things as a gym, meeting room, and by it being an annex, it doesn't have to then be built to police code. And then it would probably cost the $5 million that you saw towns like Duxbury just spent. And maybe it could only be 8,000 feet like Hudson's. Did you just see that just now? So here we are again. Groundhog Day, here we are again. But the movie that captures this process is, of course, actually Bonfire of the Vanities. Just consider this, or consider these facts. Chairman Larry O'Brien, quoted in the January 10th edition of the Town Crier, justifies this as, we should do this because it's the closest project we have ready to go. Let me just repeat that. From the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, we should do this because it's the closest project we have ready to go. So much for decision-making in Sudbury. Town Manager Valenti, in this town meeting a few years ago, this is just the first of many. Selectman Hardy, in the January 10th edition of Town Crier, regarding major projects, which he has just summarised, including the Town Hall and the Fairbanks Community Centre, we want everyone to get their building in the end, and we have to work out a way to make that all happen. The Facilities Director, Jim Kelly, presented at the Chamber of Commerce in April, and I asked him at the end whether he had an estimate of the cost to fix the existing police station's roof. And he said no, he did not have that. And I asked him, did he not think that that was something that he should know? And he said, no, I don't think it is something I should know. Well, so much for due diligence in Sudbury. And then last but not least, there's tax collector Turkelson in the Town Crier. It's only $85 a year for a 20-year bond, $1,700 a household. And don't forget to multiply that by the total number of projects.
Sir?
Yes, okay. That's my conclusion. The process has lacked openness. It has lacked transparency. It has lacked due diligence. It has lacked fiscal responsibility. And witness to this latest twist, it has lacked honesty. Apart from that, no problem.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 16, the main motion? Could you please rise and hold your card up? Thank you.
Jennifer Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. I just have a question about clarification, and the reason I'm asking the question is because I'm not quite sure about the design, and I know that it's a lot of people have questions about the design. So my clarification question is, are we voting to spend money to develop further the design that we have now, or to reconsider the design and maybe take a step backwards? One of the concerns I have is about the site plan and why we're not making this more like a campus like they have in Wayland, some of the other towns where we have a public safety combined building. Why do we have a separate police station? And I don't think there's been enough discussion with the town to answer that question.
I might have to ask you to repeat a couple of those, but to connect, if you're thinking about connecting a building with a new building, that would actually add additional costs. So the idea was to build a separate building next to the existing fire station. The campus would affect the one place where the public would enter, both the fire department facility as well as the police department facility. The idea of going forward with design only is not to redesign the building. We have a schematic plan that has been thought out over and over and over again, particularly by the Blue Ribbon Committee, who was charged with this mission. They created five schemes. They got prices for every scheme. They analyzed every scheme. They located different schemes on the plan. They spent a tremendous amount of work. So this plan is schematic. We've got a good cost estimate, but there are some things that we want to do a little bit more. And that's finalize some of those cost estimates, finalize some of those site questions. And this is what we think is appropriate for the town to move forward with.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 16? Way in the back. Stand up, please. Can you bring this gentleman a mic?
Dan Martin, 86 Brookdale Road. Sorry, Mr. Kelly, you said that the design is complete, yet the Design Review Board recently gave a number of comments about the what we perceived was the incompletion of these schematics, and was wondering whether these would be addressed before this schematic went on for bidding. To be precise, we had comments on the site plan, which I saw. Some of those were actually addressed when what was presented up here, but we also had issues with the east and west facing sides of the building. Have those been addressed? Will people see more of those, or is the schematic really done?
I'm not sure. Can you repeat that question?
You say that the schematic is done and it's ready for design so that we can get the construction costs. Am I right?
Okay, so what we have now is we have a schematic plan. It's what it's going to look like. It's where it's going to go. The insides have been laid out. But the next step in construction is you have to create construction quality plans. What tell you dimensionally every square inch of a building. They tell you about the size of the foundation, the reinforcing of the foundation, the elevation of the foundation, the type of the wall, the construction. I mean, ultimate details, and that's how you get to your ultimate bid price. So those are the schematic is complete. The next step is construction documents.
Okay, as we found the elevations to be completely lacking because one face basically is facing Hudson Road, and it looked like it had no windows.
So the elevations...
Will things like that be addressed?
Yes, absolutely.
And will there be a period for the public and other boards to comment on those?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, right in front. Try it again. We're getting help.
Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. Very good. First, I want to say that the current police station is in deplorable state. My concern is I've attended many, many meetings, and in every meeting that I've attended, it was clear that the former Chief Glavin had tremendous input in the design of the current station. For the unfortunate situation, I think we should postpone this until a new permanent chief is in place, and let us hear his input in the design, and then we can go forward with this. So my question is, isn't it true in all your presentations you've stated that former Chief Glavin had tremendous input in the design of the police station, and doesn't it make sense to have the new permanent chief give his input before we go out and bid on something somebody else had plans on? The new chief might have a totally different idea of the layout of the police station.
Yes. I can say that in regards to the input that Chief Glavin had, yes, it was tremendous, but I can tell you that we worked side by side. There was no, and our ideas were very parallel to what it comes down to. Now, obviously, we don't have a permanent chief at this time, but I can tell you that his ideas, his perceptions are the same as mine, and they will be carried forward. As well, Lieutenant Grady is part of this equation, and he, as well, was involved tremendously in the schematic arrangements and trying to get things appropriate. So I would disagree with that in that, you know, if we push it forward, we're looking at escalation of costs and so forth. And I can assure you that the thoughts and ideas are very parallel to what Chief Glavin has and what we did as a team.
I'm going to ask the Finance Committee if they've reached a position.
We have, Mr. Moderator. Finance Committee supports this article. The vote was 5-4. Five for the article, four against.
Yes, sir. You stand up. Get a mic over there.
J.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I support this article. I've watched the process over the past 6 years. And first of all, I want to say that I really resent people coming to town meeting and questioning the honesty of the board and commissions and members. I think a great deal of thought and effort has been put into this process. We've seen it evolve from a grand scheme, which the town, you know, did not support. I happen to support that original plan, but could also see that it was, you know, far too grand for what we could afford or need. We clearly need a new police station. We're not building this for, you know, one police chief. You know, we're building it for the whole department. Presumably, the former chief's input represented the interests of the whole department and all his colleagues, and came from, you know, 20 years and living with that building and watch it decline and the needs change. And so I fully support this and applaud the effort that has gone into bringing it to town meeting in this current form. Thank you.
Yes. Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, way in the back there in the aisle. Could you get a mic up there?
Rick Johnson, Bend Road. We heard from Mr. Stein and his reasons for not supporting this on the FinCom. Could we please hear from the other three members that voted against the article and why they voted against, please, especially the chairman's views on this. Thank you.
Chairman?
Okay, I'll start. I guess for me it was, this is such a significant change from what we've seen before. It's relatively new for me personally to evaluate, and I felt that I needed, frankly, more time, and that we would perhaps all benefit from a little more time.
I also voted no for the same reason. I strongly support a new police station, but I did not feel I had enough time to be able to vet anything that was really presented before me.
I agree. Same reasons. It was too short notice of a change. I supported the original first article of the full construction of the police station. I think this is starting to piecemeal it and delaying the construction, which would increase the cost. So I did not support this article.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, right over there. Stand up, please.
Doug Zingale, 48 Clinton Road. I haven't followed the process on this matter over the last few years, so my comments are limited. But my feeling is that a 14,000 square foot building is very large for the size of the police force. I think the benchmarks that were put up there are very helpful. So this is really not much more than an intuitive comment, but 28 people, a small subset occupying that size facility, strikes me as overkill. And since, although this is design only, it is to get to the next level of detail on a plan for that size facility, that raises a flag for me. Thank you.
Yes, on the aisle.
My name is Carmen Gentile.
Can you get a little closer to the mic? Oh.
My name is Carmen Gentile. I live on Surrey Lane, 33 Surrey Lane. I've been a resident for about 32 years. I think we're very fortunate to have volunteers amongst us who contribute their time and efforts for the common good. And we've got three groups of those volunteers who've looked closely at or created the basis for this article for the police station. We've got the members of the Finance Committee who met years ago, 5 years ago, and supported it, and more recently supported the article that's in the warrant, and now we have a lesser version. The Board of Selectmen and the 13 members of the Blue Ribbon Committee who were specifically evaluating the police station and determining the article that was in the warrant. Bill Braun, Phil Connors, The former police chief, Peter Fagin, was actually on the Blue Ribbon Committee. Ann Hollows, Matthew Murphy, Michael Melnick, Derek Oram, Nick Palermo, John Rutlinger, Thomas Scarlatta, of course, Bob Stein, who's spoken, and Joe Zerbowski. A very diverse group of our neighbors who were able to come together for a common purpose, that same purpose that we addressed tonight. I looked for a copy of their report on the town website. It's a great source of information about the town, its committees, boards, budgets, wealth of information. But being somewhat digitally challenged, I ended up getting a copy at the Flynn Building. So the final report of the Sudbury Police Station Blue Ribbon Committee is comprehensive, yet concise. It's 8.5 pages of text with about 4 pages of diagrams and a single-page budget chart. I decided to print up some copies and give them up before tonight's meeting started, and Lenny Simon, who I met last weekend, decided to join me, and so the two of us handed out about 100 copies of that to folks tonight so you could have a chance to take a look at it. The report answers important questions that a taxpayer and resident would have. I urge you to read it tonight before we vote. I support this article not only because of my own personal observations over the years, the many shortcomings of the current station, beginning in the last century when I was on the FinCom and liaison to the police department, but more importantly because we value the work of our policemen and policewomen. We value the work they undertake. We appreciate the need for a safe and reasonable environment in which to work. And I value the opinions and recommendations of the members of the Blue Ribbon Committee, the Board of Selectmen, and the Finance Committee. This report was prepared 5 years ago, and we need to move forward. We really do. That station is, it's incredible that police are able to use it and use it as well as they are, but I mean, it's just an accident waiting to happen. So I urge you to support the article. Thank you.
Anyone else who wishes to speak? Yes, sir. Mr. Tyler has presented a proposed amendment to me that's not on the view graph yet. Can you put it on the view graph now? And he's asked to amend the current article by putting two options before the voters, a $7.5 million 14,000 square foot building and a $4.5 million alternative. And the second part goes to describe the $4.5 million alternative. It's my ruling, Mr. Tyler, that you can put one or the other before this hall because the hall can't vote on one or the other all in one. So pick one and go forward.
Well, then I'll just make my presentation and you won't do it on an amendment.
No amendment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, okay. So let's just move to the next slide then. So the next slide. Okay. 6 years ago, 71% of this hall voted overwhelmingly. So that's a very positive vote to spend the $8.2 million to build that 18,000 square foot station. Well on our way to having our new police station. Next slide, please. Reality hit. Precinct by precinct votes. Next slide. 57% of the voters said no, too much. Now we're being asked tonight to fund $600,000 without having authorization to spend for the whole building. That, to me, doesn't make sense at all. And I think if there were, next slide, please. So what did those 2007 votes tell us? It should have told us some things. It told me that this hall isn't going to decide the size of the building or how much we're spending on it. The voters are. So it seemed to me that we ought to ask the voters, are you going to support it? Are you going to support $7.5 million? And if not, would you support something else? And if not, then we're not going to go forward with anything. So we're plodding away. It's this way or the highway. Do it my way or nothing. And I don't think that's the right way at all. I remember years ago when there were questions about how much overrides would this town support. And the selectmen in their wisdom at that time said, well, why don't we ask the voters and put a, as I recall, it was like a two-tiered override proposal before the voters. We said, are we going to ask for a $1.something million override or a $2.something million override? And I, frankly, I don't have the research capabilities to go back and figure out what that vote was, but I remember that happening, and maybe it was my imagination. Whatever, it still sounds like a good idea. Let's find out what the voters are willing to do. I think we need a new police station too. I think if the voters support the $7.5 million proposal, I think we can afford it. But we don't know. We can vote here and think, well, we've really done our service. Let's vote, let's get our two-thirds or whatever we need tonight, and it's still in the hands of the voters. So why don't we put a couple of proposals out there? If we've made the case that we need this facility that's in the pipeline that the Blue Ribbon Committee says we need, and we can put that forward and convince the voters, fine. If not, then maybe we're in the situation that many of us find ourselves in business or as homeowners. I'd love to have this mansion, but you know, my budget and what I can, you know, get for mortgage and whatnot is just a little bit less. So as much as I like all of those things, I have to get less. So the question to me is, it's extremely risky to decide now to spend $600,000 on the bet that once the plans are there, the voters are going to say, okay, well, now we're going to spend the other $6.5 million. To me, that doesn't make any sense at all. I don't think the question that the voters are worried about has anything to do with whether it's, I mean, I think the question is this the right-sized police station? Is this the right-sized project? Not, shall we just fund the design part of it? So I think the selectmen have taken a step backwards by only coming forward with this. I'd far rather see them go for the whole $7.5 million if that's what they choose to do. But this proposal before you now, which I couldn't amend in the way that I think I should have been able to amend it, and I still, you know, I can't question as he's made a decision, but I believe you can put in front of the voters two proposals, and we could vote here tonight that we're going to go with the, you know, the biggest proposal the voters will do, and that's what I tried to put there. And so I'd like about 3 minutes if I could.
Is the hall willing, if you're willing to give Mr. Tyler another 3 minutes, signify by raising your card. Those opposed? Sorry, Mr. Tyler, you're at an end.
Okay.
Next speaker. Yes, over here in the aisle.
Thank you. Michael Fee, 48 Henry's Mill. I'm the outgoing chairman of the planning board. The planning board has followed this process closely for a while now. We were aware of the fact that the article's proponents were considering bifurcating the article and pursuing a much more modest approach by asking for only design funds at this point in time. We believe that that's a very reasonable and prudent response to some of the legitimate questions that have been raised about the process and the police station itself. We took a vote last night, and the planning board unanimously supports the article as amended.
It supports the main motion on the screen.
Okay.
Thank you. Right over here. Stand up, please. Yes, sir. Could you stand up so the Boy Scouts can see who I'm pointing to? Thank you. No? Okay, you're next, sir.
Dick Williamson, 21 Pendleton Road. I've looked at this process going way back to the first proposal several years ago, and I've looked at what the Blue Ribbon Committee has done, and I think that a lot of input has come from throughout the town trying to have the right size of the police station. And I've looked at the schematics, and I've also done the tour of the police station. I don't know how many of you have done the tour either in person or online. And boy, the current station is a mess. So I don't think there's any debate in many people's mind that we need a new police station. The question is the size. And the other comment I would make is there's a tendency to say, well, we don't have all the answers today, so let's put off getting the answers. Well, we don't have all the answers on the design, and if we put off the design, we won't have the answers, and that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You'll never get there if that's your attitude toward developing things in town. I think this is the right thing to do at this point. I also wanted to just tell you a personal observation I have of the police station. I had the unfortunate situation a few years ago where Cara and I tried to occupy the same space on Concord Road, and I was laying there on the dazed on the blacktop, and I can tell you that the police and ambulance service were very professional. They were there very quickly. They took care of me, got me to Emerson Hospital, and of course, most bicyclists, the first thing they ask when they're hurt is not how badly am I hurt, how bad is my bicycle hurt? Well, I was curious about that, and so I went down to the police station, and they had my bicycle, my helmet, my panniers, and all my personal belongings. They picked them up and stored them in the police station, and they, when I went down to retrieve them, they had them all there ready for me, which was really great. That serviced me very well. But when I was looking at the storage areas in the current police station, my first question is, how in the world did you ever stick my bicycle in here? I don't think there's enough room for a bicycle. And the expansion of storage space and many other aspects of the police station are right on. And I think that the aim of this article and the aim of the design is to have the right size of the police station. And I think we're headed in that direction. I urge you to support this article.
Okay. Excuse me? The fire? Right here.
Good evening. My name is Kirsten Rupinian, and I'm here tonight.
A
Kirsten
little closer
Rupinian,
to the
Harness
mic.
Lane. Can you hear me now? Okay. I'm here tonight to ask you to support the building of the police station.
A little closer to the mic.
Yell. Okay. You've most likely heard about, as we've been listening tonight, some of the issues and why not to pass this article. I think that there's been a lot of outreach to the citizens. There have been public hearings, CIPC hearings, FinCom hearings, selectmen's hearings, Blue Ribbon committees, town meeting articles in the past. I think that there are people on all those boards and committees, and there's no reason for them not to make decisions that are in the best interest of the town. I think they've done their homework. That's an awful lot of people to implicate that they haven't done their due diligence. I believe that they've done their due diligence, and I think it's time we get the building built. Tonight, you've heard arguments for and against the police station, and I could stand here and talk about the financial reasons that we should do this now, especially because the borrowing rates are low, the debt's going down, et cetera, but you all know that. You've been here before, and you've heard it before. It's kind of like buying the car. You know you need the car, but you wait and you wait, and you fix it again and again. You wind up spending more to fix it until something happens, and then you have to buy the car. You don't really want to spend the money, but now you have to. The police station has been put off for a really long time. The issue is not going away. We're in a good position to get this done, and the need for a police station isn't, as I said, going to go away. Much like needing that new car, let's not wait until we have to do something. But here's the thing, though. This is what I want to talk about quickly. We also can't forget that we're talking about not just the building, but the people who work there. This is kind of the human side of this article. Every morning, a police officer gets up, gets ready for work, just like the rest of us, says goodbye to their family, their kids, their spouse, with full knowledge that that might be the day, the one day that their lives change. They may be called upon to do something they never wanted to do, but they're ready to do at a moment's notice. That when they get back home that night, they could be different. They could be forever altered because of something that occurred that day. They go in when everybody else goes out. You've heard this over and over again, particularly this past year. The thinking in a town like Sudbury is that these events would never and could never happen. But we sitting in this hall know better, don't we? We know bad things can happen in a little town like Sudbury. We know our public safety officials have acted heroically on many occasions. We know that when 911 is called, the public safety officials are the ones that we rely on to help. And they do, and they have. Whether it's a small child that's wandered off, an elderly person who fell or was hurt, a car accident, a house break, bomb threats, all of that and more. They're the ones who go in. They're the ones who have to deal with the tragedy that none of us wants to deal with. They do this on our behalf. They keep us, our children, our homes, our schools, our neighborhoods, and our streets safe. They're the ones who accept that danger is a part of the everyday job. They're the ones who have to work in an environment that by the very nature of the job is stressful, difficult, and often, too often, depressing. They're the ones asking for your consideration tonight. They need a police station. These men and women are our police. They're our community. We are here to help them. They save people. They uphold the law. They do sometimes the unthinkable, but mostly they're just here for us. So for that, they deserve our support. And I hope you might consider the human side of being a police officer. They, too, are people, and they deserve our support. If we can spend $40 million on a school, don't they deserve an adequate place to work? Finally, we all hope that we never have to dial 911, but take comfort that if we do, our police officers will be there. I urge your support of the original article.
So right there. Could you stand up, please, so the Boy Scout can see you?
Tom Van Dyne, Balcombe Road, 54 Balcombe Road. I came here tonight thinking I was going to vote for or against a police station, and now we're voting for 8 or 9% of a police station. So I'm concerned that this is really voting for the police station. There's no vote here. We're going to spend $627,000. And I guess that's for a police station somewhere between $7 and $8 million. I thought Mr. Tyler had a good point here. Maybe we need a four point something million dollar police station. So I don't see where this is related to what everybody came here to vote on.
Yes, right there, please. Could you stand? The mic's coming to you.
Laura Abrams, Horse Pond Road. I have a couple of questions. One was, I think somebody said earlier that the current police station is worth roughly about $850,000. Is the plan to sell that? And if so, would the money go towards defraying the debt? That's my first question.
Why don't you ask all your questions? Go ahead.
My second question is, as a business person on Route 20 and where the majority of businesses are on Route 20, and now that TD Bank has moved out of the building adjacent to the current police station, I just feel that a presence on Route 20 is still necessary for the Sudbury Police. I think the majority of people in this hall want a new police station. They want something better for our police officers who are out there protecting us, but nobody can seem to come to an agreement, and those are just a couple of my concerns.
A new gentleman want to answer, please?
So the plans for the future of the building and the site have not been discussed thoroughly, and that's purposefully. We need to, that'll be a process that will take some time. We may end up at town meeting discussing the options for what we do with that piece of property. We know we own that piece of property, and we know there'll be some discussion, but we don't want to jump to conclusions and make it a decision now. That's going to take quite a bit of work, I believe, and discussions. There may be opportunities, as I mentioned, for another need, a municipal need. So I think we're all excited of that, but I think we need to make sure we get the certain things done in a certain sequence, and I believe this sequence is the right way to go. As far as the presence on Route 20, that's been discussed a lot. One of the things I learned over the past several months was the fact that the police officers that generally respond are not in the station. They're already out on the road. I'm sure I may be corrected in some of this, but so, for instance, if there's an event or a situation in any part of town, there's generally a squad car nearby. They're not in the station waiting for that call to come in. And I believe the majority does want the station, as you mentioned.
Yes, sir. Way in the back. Stand up, please.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road. So I think I have a comment and a question, and I'll be quick. I think the process getting here has been sloppy, especially with some of the things on the CIPC bylaws that appear to have been ignored and some of the opinions we got from town council on that bylaw. But we are where we are. It sounds like FinCom supports the larger station, and I think as a hall, at some point, we just have to say whether it's supposed to be 14,000 square feet or 10,000 square feet. I think we have to defer to the people that have looked at this in great detail, and if they're telling us it's 14,000 square feet, I think we have to say, okay, that's the size and go forward on it. So I will support this. I think it makes sense. And my question now for probably Mr. Kelly is approving a design services only amendment like this, is this something that is commonly done, or do other towns do this prior to undertaking large capital projects like a police station?
Other towns do go through this process where they get design fund only prior to the whole construction and design at once, all at once.
And so by doing this, we can then go back out and get a very firm construction bid. Is that what happens as the next step?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We ready for a vote? Move, call the question. Is there a second to that? All those who would like to speak but for the call of the question, raise your cards. There's one in front. That's all I see. So for the guidance of the hall, all those in favor of calling the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by more than two-thirds. This is a two-thirds vote, and the reason for that is because there is borrowing involved. So all those who are in favor of the May motion, there is only one motion, the motion that you see on the view graph, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, passes by way more than two-thirds. We're now moving on to Article 17. Do we have a motion? Mr. Ryan?
Good moderator, move in the words of the article, with a sum of $10,000 appropriated, said sum to be raised by transfer of $10,000 from Article 18 of the 2012 annual town meeting.
Does that receive a second? It does. Who is making the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of Sudbury. My name is Jack Ryan, and I am a member of the Fairbanks Task Force. When the Fairbanks roof article did not pass at the special town meeting last September, a substantial reason given in opposition to that article was the uncertainty of the future of the original Fairbanks building. A 1950s cinder block school, and whether that original building would be part of a larger multi-generational community center. In response to that vote, the Board of Selectmen established the Fairbanks Task Force. Task Force met numerous times over the last several months. As a result of its work, the task force concluded that a feasibility study addressing the needs of such a multi-generational community center and the potential place of the original Fairbanks building within it should be conducted before the major capital expenditure of a new roof was made on the building. The task force further concluded that funds should be allocated for the continuing maintenance and repair of the roof for the next year while the feasibility study was being completed. That recommendation for additional funds for maintenance over the next year will be the subject of the next article, Article 18. The feasibility study would be conducted by a design firm with experience in community center design. The design firm would talk to user groups, seniors, park and rec, and others to assess the kind of facility needed to meet the needs of the users of a community center. It would take about 6 to 8 months to complete such a study, and the cost would be about $75,000. The design firm would then develop a conceptual design for the community center. You've just heard about construction documents, and before construction documents come schematic designs. Conceptual designs are maybe a little bit before schematic designs. They may not have as much detail as schematic designs, such as you saw for the police station, but they'll give you an idea of what the structure and the building would look like. In doing so, in developing this conceptual design, the design firm would actually have to make a determination as to whether the existing Fairbanks structure could be used as a part of any new facility. With respect to the existing structure, it's important to note that one of the considerations the task force had to take into mind was that the cinder block walls contain no steel reinforcement. Therefore, that area of the Fairbanks building, the original building, if you will, cannot support a second floor without major structural additions, probably the kind of thing that would not be worth doing. The walls also cannot be torn down because the support for the roof of the Fairbanks building comes from the internal walls itself as opposed to the exterior. The exterior does not hold up the roof. The roof is held up by the interior walls along with grid work between those walls. The task force itself looked at the possibility that the original Fairbanks structure could be used as part of a community center. Now, in that regard, it's important to note that obviously we're not talking about the Atkinson Pool to the upper right, the senior center to the lower left, or the gymnasium where precincts 1, 2, and 5 vote. Those areas are not have a different kind of roof system and do not have the flat roof system. The investigation done by the task force included talking to folks here in town with architectural, engineering, and construction experience. The investigation done by the task force involved talking to seniors and the folks at Park and Rec about their respective ideas on what a community center should include. In the end, the task force concluded that it was reasonably possible and perhaps even probable that the Fairbanks structure could be included as part of a community center. But the task force believed that we needed a more expert analysis of the needs of the users, an analysis of the condition of the existing building, a conceptual design, and a cost estimate for construction. A feasibility study would include all of these elements. The Fairbanks Task Force also concluded that if the original Fairbanks structure were to be used as part of a community center, it was necessary to replace the roof on the building as soon as possible. There's no dispute that the roof is leaking badly and needs significant work. The purpose of a feasibility study is to determine whether the building underneath that roof is a building we want to keep and want to keep using. Finally, the task force believed that of the $75,000 needed for the feasibility study, we would ask the town for only $10,000. The bulk of that money should come from user groups most interested in this community center and help build the community involvement around the community center right from the get-go. The rest is being raised from private sources. We are currently in negotiations with those sources, and they have asked respectfully that we not speak publicly about the status of those negotiations, but rest assured, we are working very hard on them. The $10,000 from the town will come from a transfer from funds left over from Article 18 of the 2012 town meeting. That is the article that was funded the HVAC system or the ERV system for the natatorium. It's the HVAC or ERV unit on the top of the roof next to the pool. In fact, it might even show up in one of the earlier photographs. That is where the $10,000 would come from. When the feasibility study goes forward, if the feasibility study goes forward, we would expect to report back a year from now on whether or not the Fairbanks structure should continue, and if so, would then ask for funds to replace the roof as soon as possible. Thank you very much.
Just to make certain, do we have a second to that motion? Yes, thank you. Let's ask the Finance Committee, Mark. Can you put the motion back up, Mark? Okay. Mark Manassian from the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee supports the article.
Selectman Bob Hardy.
We support the article, Mr. Moderator.
Does the CIPC have a position on this? Marianne Bilodeau, who's the ex officio member of that committee.
The CIPC does support this article.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on the main motion? I see no one.
All those in favor of the motion, this is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising cards. Those opposed. It is the unanimous. There is one opposed. Everyone else is in favor. It passes almost unanimously. We're now on to Article 18, Fairbank Center Roof Project. Motion will be made by Mr. Kelly.
Move to appropriate the sum of $50,000 to be expended for the purpose of making repairs to selected portions of the flat roof areas labeled 3, 4, and 6 on the Russo Bar roof plan at the Fairbank Community Center, and all expenses connected therewith, including professional and engineering, the preparation of plans, specifications, and bidding documents. Said sum to be raised by transfer of $50,000 from Article 18 of the 2012 annual town meeting.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Kelly?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Jim Kelly. I will present Article 18 without a PowerPoint presentation. The difference between the motion and what is printed in the warrant is that we know the amount requested, which is $50,000, and we know how we will raise those funds, which is through a transfer from the Natatorium ERV article last year. Article 18 requests $50,000 to be available to fund costs of repairing roof areas 3, 4, and 6 on the Russo Bar plan, as shown on the slide behind me. As you heard in Article 17, these roof repairs and the funds will protect and preserve the roof until the feasibility study is underway and the future use of the old school wing is determined. The funding is available because the Green Community Grant received by the Energy Committee last year was $250,000. The committee had hoped to get something in the range of $80,000, but was pleasantly surprised and proud at the award amount of $250,000. There will be approximately $150,000 available from that article. Oh, this is too bad. I have a great picture of lifting the ERV off the roof. So my whole slide. So we did start the ERV project. The roof is 99% complete. The ladder goes on tomorrow. We're working on a punch list for the ERV, the HVAC. It has lots of names. I would like to thank particularly the Energy Committee for an amazing effort on that grant. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Mark Manassian from the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee supports the article.
Bob Hardy, Selectman.
We support the article.
And Marianne Bilodeau from the CIPC. Is that the Capital Improvement Planning Committee?
The CIPC supports this article.
Okay. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 18, this motion? Yes, could you stand, please? Can we get a mic to this gentleman?
Rick Johnson, Bent Road. Just a question on process again. The CIPC, everything's supposed to be into the CIPC by October 1st. So are we following process to get this money? This certainly wasn't brought to the CIPC for their review before October 1st. That's the bylaw, is it not?
Mary Ann Bilodeau, do you have any idea whether it was brought to the CIPC before October 1st?
The overall Fairbank roof project was, but the smaller portion was not at this point, unless you look at it as part of the Russo Bar report.
I don't believe we're looking at it as part of that, are we?
I'm sorry?
We're not looking at it as part of that. It's a separate project, right? $50,000 that we're trying to transfer money from?
Okay, what's the question?
Did we follow the bylaw?
Okay.
Thank you.
Question for town council. Was the bylaw followed, the CIPC bylaw followed in with respect to Article 18?
Mr. Moderator, the bylaw was followed.
Okay.
And,
thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 8, the motion before you on Article 18? I see no one. All those in favor, it's a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, passes unanimously. We're now on Article 19, Town Center Traffic Improvements. Bill Place will move the article. Director of DPW.
Mr. Moderator, moving the words of the article with a sum of $700,000 appropriate, said sum to be raised by taxation, all appropriation hereunder be contingent upon the approval of Proposition 2.5, capital expenditures extraordinary.
Hang on. What he's doing, we'll ask him to repeat it, but what he's doing is reading the motion that you see on the view graph. Bill, can you move much closer to the mic, both? You're going to have to still get closer.
Mr. Moderator, moving the words of the article with the sum of $700,000 appropriate, said sum to be raised by taxation. All appropriation hereunder being contingent upon the approval of Proposition 2.5, capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Laws, Chapter 59, Section 21C, I 1/2.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Place?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. For those of you who don't know me, my name is William Place. I'm your Director of Public Works and Town Engineer. Who drove through the Town Center intersection on your way to town meeting tonight? Who drives through there on a daily basis? How many of you have witnessed accident or near accident at the intersection? Well, you're very familiar with the intersection. Many of you have come to know its idiosyncrasies and how to handle it. But many drivers, including student drivers and people from out of town, have trouble at the intersection. Lanes are too narrow. The dedicated left turn signal is not apparent on the oncoming traffic. And lanes are not aligned properly and cause conflicts. Pedestrian crossing is difficult. Long backups encourage risky driving. Most importantly, the signals themselves have been failing at an alarming rate, having failed 4 times in the last 8 months.
Mr. Place, can you just get a little closer to the mic, please?
This intersection experienced 71 accidents over a 3-year period from 2007 to 2010. This is 3 times the higher than the state average for a similar-sized signalization intersection. In the traffic engineering world, this translates to a major problem. How many of you experienced the mayhem in February when the lights were out for 24 hours? Public safety personnel were at risk directing traffic, and backups were longer than normal. These lights are 58 years old. They are deteriorating rapidly. Parts are difficult to get, causing delays when they are malfunctioned. Anyone who regularly drives through the town center knows needs of improvement, both for safety reasons and aesthetically. The historic town center is one of our most cherished landscapes in town, yet it has become just another place that we are driving through on our way to other destinations. The project to improve the intersection was originally planned in the early 1990s, purely as a roadway project, focusing solely on engineering and not paying much attention to the historic details. At the urging of residents, the selectmen delayed the project in order to highlight the historic aspects of the area in an attempt to enhance them in conjunction with the roadway improvements. In 2005, a study committee was formed. And over the past 8 years, with funding from the Sudbury Foundation, Community Preservation Act, and town budget funds, The intersection has been engineered and designed to increase safety for both vehicles and pedestrians and to enhance the historic character of the area. The design of the intersection meets the goals of the town, which were determined in several public forums over the past several years, as well as meeting traffic safety requirements. The plans have the support of the major stakeholders in the center, including the First Parish Church, who are the most impacted by the new design. The intersection will remain essentially as it is now, with some tweaks, only better design and constructed in more modern standards. This will be the finished project. However, this is only 60% of what you get. The scope of work extends from 27 from the Pekin Road to the Flynn Building, and Concord Road from Revolutionary Monument to Goodman's Hill Road. 36 catch basins will be installed where none exist currently. The drainage improvements will comply with EPA standards, phase two stormwater standards regulations. Rusted corrugated pipe that exists out there now will be replaced with concrete pipe. Signals will be equipped with a preempt opticon for emergency vehicles. Granite curbing will be installed to control stormwater runoff and prevent washouts. Transformers will be placed underground. Electrical conduit will be installed for future lighting of the town center. Entire road service will be rebuilt. The intersection will include new traffic lights, which will be programmed to meet the specific demands of the intersection. The new automated lights will be pole-mounted as they currently are to reduce the visual impact. Traffic lanes will be sized more appropriately. Walkways and crosswalks will be added to better accommodate pedestrians, especially many families that walk Noyes School every day, in addition to facilitating public use of the area. Materials will be chosen to maintain the historic atmosphere of the area, including the use of alternative pavement materials to delineate the crosswalks and the traffic islands. On the screen are a few Photoshop images to give you a sense of what is planned. The committee has spent years looking at alternative designs and listening to residents' opinions of what the preferable configuration for the intersection. It seems everyone would do something slightly different. We have had our traffic engineers review many plans and suggestions from residents and committee members. And while some may want a radical change to the town center, we found that the majority of the residents do not. What we have established in this process is that the proposed design meets the goals originally endorsed for the project without sacrificing the historic character of the area. It will provide traffic flow and safety in the intersection of both cars and people. Residents are already beginning to see the effects of the positive changes that have occurred in the town center area with the removal of the old house next to Grinnell Park and the renovation of the village green. The enhancement plan in this project will complement those improvements, making the town center a true centerpiece for the town center. The engineering plans are complete and ready to go to bid. The current estimate to construct the project is $1.8 million. There are several funding sources that can be used, including $1 million from Chapter 90 funds from the state and $100,000 from the CPA funds for historic landscaping and restoration. This will be voted on in Article 36. The balance of the funds needed and budgeted under this article is $700,000. And while this is a significant amount, the goal is to complete the improvements to last for several decades. I am going to turn the presentation over to Selectman O'Brien, who will discuss the funding strategy for this article. Now it fits in with the town's strategic plan.
Good evening, Larry O'Brien, Board of Selectmen. We have been looking at this and speaking about this project for many years, as you heard from Mr. Place, and the final design plans are ready. As we discussed somewhat last night, the intention of the Board of Selectmen is to under the guidance from the strategic financial plan that we've mentioned numerous times last night and tonight, is to break this down into three segments of funding: $100,000 from the Community Preservation Act for historic restoration of the town center area, $1 million broken down over 2 years, $500,000 in this fiscal year, $500,000 in next fiscal year from Chapter 90 state aid, which is specifically available only for highway-type projects, and this is an applicable project. And then $700,000 would be raised through taxation. The feeling of the Board of Selectmen is that we could do this in a one-year period. We do it as a capital exclusion. It will require a vote on June 25th for a second approval as a moneyed article. But the impact on the average homes, $628,000, the average homes tax bill, would be $110. Now, the thinking behind this from the Board of Selectmen is that it goes on the tax rolls and it comes off the tax rolls as soon as it's paid off, so it's not a lasting or multi-year debt, A. B, it fits into our declining debt from the $125 million that we spent on schools, and as you saw in the police station presentation in this slide here, debt is declining. If we do not approve this article, the potential for your tax bill due to the decrease in debt, that's important to keep in mind, due to the decrease in debt would be approximately $128. We're asking to use $110 of that for 1 year. That would be for fiscal year 14, and that's how we would pay for this. And then the financing would be there. Mr. Place has the engineered plans. He would have all the money, and we would be able to have a well-engineered town center that, in addition to what you see is the cosmetic changes and the improvement in the flow of traffic, would also include all of the details of Mr. Place mentioned previously, stormwater management, obviously a dramatic increase in the technology on the lighting fixtures, the ability to sequence them multiple times a day versus right now, which is red-green, or if you go through there at 11 or 12 o'clock at night, you get flashing yellow. And that's what 58-year-old technology provides, and those are the only options. So we can get better traffic flow at peak times and at off times and at school times, et cetera. And I think another significant improvement is the pedestrian safety. There is an enormous number of families that walk to the Noyes School, and they would be able to take care of, they would be able to utilize Safe Passage with clearly constructed and marked walkways and crossways, as well as functioning walkway signs that would interact with the lighting. So overall, I think it's a long overdue project. The financing plan is sound. We can use a majority of it will be funded with state funds. And we, the Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this, and we ask for your support this evening for this. Thank you.
Bob Stein, Finance Committee.
FinCom supports this article.
CIPC have a position on this?
The CIPC supports this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on the motion? Can we get the motion back up? And anybody wish to be heard on that motion? Signify by raising your cards. Yes, on the aisle.
I'm Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. One thing I don't think I heard in the presentation was whether there's going to be a smart traffic light. I think that's something that's extremely important. And that's not just a traffic light that can be turned differently in, at night from the way it is in the daytime. If you remember how the intersection of 117 and 126 used to be and how it is now, you can see the value of a smart light. Also, the light at 9 Acre Corners, the traffic flow there is far better than it was. This requires wires to be laid in the roadway, and that it actually detects the presence of cars. And so it's something that's expensive by itself, but if you're going to be tearing up the road anyway, then it's something that definitely should be considered. If you remember when that traffic light was first put in the center, traffic got immeasurably worse the next day, and it has never come back to even close to being the way it was without the light. Now, that's not to say that we don't need the light or that it would have been that good now. There's a lot more traffic that goes through there now. But it does show that the traffic light can do, in some cases, as much harm as good. And this is an excellent opportunity to get a traffic light in there that actually does the job. I don't know how much they cost. Maybe somebody in the hall does. But I hope it's something that's being considered.
Mr. Place.
Traffic signals have been designed with a loop detector system in the roadway itself. The traffic lights have been designed for a loop detector system in the roadway.
so that it's, you don't have to wait for this traffic, you know, to sequence through different phases. It'll detect whether a car's there. It'll change the sequence so that the traffic who's, say, in Concord Road can move through and not have to wait for a full cycle.
Mr. Place, is that what's called a smart light?
Yes, it is.
The answer to your question is yes, Mr. Cohn. Anybody else wish to be heard? Over there, midway through. Can you stand up, please, sir?
Hi, Jason Bernard, 35 Wake Robin Road. Just a quick question. The commuter traffic coming from Whalen up 27 gets backed up a great deal, and if you're going up to North Sudbury and you want to take a right to not have to wait to go up the light, presently you can, but it looks like in the drawing they've decided to make the road be one way only coming from Sudbury. Can somebody just briefly comment on why they decided to make it directional one way only?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. That may be the single most asked question about this entire project, the road, the no-name road in front of Town Hall. Currently, the diagram does show that it would be a one direction down, but we are capable of making it two-way. The width of the road would support that, and it's going to be given further consideration. I think there'll also be some consultation with public safety to, you know, get their input on it when the project is completed. But it will still have the ability to be two-way. That's just what we're showing in the drawings for illustration purposes.
Okay. Yes, over there. Please stand up. Can we get a mic over here?
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. What consideration, if any, was given to bicycle safety in the design of this intersection?
Mr. O'Brien?
As part of the discussions, you know, that we had, Mr. Gish, the diagrams that you saw there, clearly there'll be clearer delineation. There will be traffic islands separating the roads. They'll be slightly wider, so there will be better opportunity for bicycles to pass through. And I think Chief Nix left, but I believe bicycles are also permissible on the walkways. And, you know, there'll be an extensive network of walkways going through, including a walkway that'll be going down to the newly added portion of Grinnell Park, as well as in front of the Hudson Road Town Center, the new plaza that's being rehabilitated. So the option would be there for cyclists to use the road or the walkway. Does that?
Okay, go ahead.
The plan does not include that at this time. And quite frankly, I don't know that there will be enough width for a, it's just not wide enough. We'd have to probably route you through the Hosmer House, and I think the Historic Commission might get upset with that. You know.
Anyone else wish to be heard? Someone hasn't spoken. Yes, ma'am. Right there. Yep. Stand up, please.
Sherry Klein, 84 Concord Road. I am currently the chair of the trustees of First Parish of Sudbury, and we had a special congregational meeting a year and a half ago, and the congregation voted in to support the plan that is currently before the hall. And so we urge your support of this plan. It's been in the works for quite some time. The town has worked very closely with First Parish, and we appreciate the work that they've done to come up with a plan that we recommend your support of. Thank you.
Anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, sir, right over there. Can we get a mic?
Yes. I'm Richard Bell, 24 Austin Road, and I am speaking as a member of the Conservation Commission, that we unanimously support this, primarily because of the upgrade to the drainage system, that the town will be obligated.
Mr. Bell, I don't think did you say you represent the Conservation Commission?
I'm reporting the.
They are in support of
in support of it, primarily because of the upgrade to the drainage the town is obligated to upgrade the drainage in that town center sometime because of EPA regulations. They'll have to be doing this in the next couple of years, and so it makes a lot of sense to combine these two. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken yet tonight? All the way in the back against the wall. Can we get a mic over there?
Anthony Fortunato, 101 Moore Road. The way I read this, it's going to be contingent on, I believe, an override. Is that correct, or am I misinterpreting the wording on the article?
Mr. O'Brien.
It's a one-year capital exclusion, Mr. Fortunato, so it will require a second vote on June 25th, and if that's approved, then there will be an override because the funds will be raised outside of the levy, and they'll be raised in 1 year, and then it will fall off of the tax rolls.
I mean, that said, I'm in support of this, but figuring how all the overrides have gone in the past 5 or 6 years, is there alternate funding available to continue on with the project if it fails?
Well, we would have the $1 million that Mr. Place is going to make available, and if the CPA article passes, which really would be the finishing touches on it. But I believe Mr. Place, from an engineering perspective, I don't want to speak for him, but I think once he starts to break open town center and you've got all the ground torn up, you're putting in conduit for electricity, conduit for signals, drainage structures, concrete pipe, et cetera, he wants. We need to have all the funding so that he can do the complete job one time and not have one of those typical, as we all think DPW projects are, where they open it up, they do something, they close it, then reopen it. We don't want to do that. Mr. Place wants to get in there and do it right the first time. So. Am I okay?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Tyler.
No.
Hang on, I've just called on this gentleman. After he finishes, then I'll entertain a call of the question. Mr. Tyler.
My side. This is going to be an amendment. It's a number one only. I'm not going to do the others, but you'll see three.
While we're waiting to get it up, why don't you read?
Move to amend Article 19 by requiring the two-way road directly in front of Town Hall be maintained two ways and at the same width.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Tyler.
Yeah, so just the first one. Can I get the next slide, please?
Mark, when we go to vote on it, can you eliminate 2 and 3 so only one shows on the screen? Thank you.
Yeah. As Mr. O'Brien correctly said, there's a lot of concern about whether, how this is going to work. I calculated, and Bill will correct me, but it's probably about a 135-degree turn that you have to make. It's not a 90-degree turn. I doubt if that's part of any sort of highway design manual in terms of proper intersections. To add additional traffic that required to go through that intersection is going to slow it down. I don't know the details of that intersection. I do know that at Haynes Road and Pantry Road, where they did one of their engineering designs, when the school buses make their left turns, they're always slowing because it's narrow, because they're long, and I can foresee, and maybe they've done a little bit better job this time, but a very long truck maneuvering and perhaps backing back and forth to get around that turn and tying up the intersection for two or three cycles. So I just think a not even 90-degree turn going up that way and continuing what we have now that works, diverting traffic out of that center is something that we should insist upon in this plan. And I heard some conversation before that perhaps this roadway here is somewhat narrower than the existing roadway, and so part of this motion is to keep the same width because that appears to be the width that you need for two lanes of traffic to go safely down there. So that's the intent of the motion. Let me just see. I think the next slide probably is relevant too. I guess that's the reasons trucks stalled, more traffic. So those are the reasons why I think this amendment is a good one, because without it, there's no assurance that we go forward. So that's all I'll say on the amendment. I do think, and this is just, I think when Mr. O'Brien was asked the question, is there backup funding, I think his answer was no, but we hope that we pass it at the capital. If in their infinite wisdom they want to amend their motion, I would suggest they have a backup plan for funding, which might be to, if we don't get the capital exclusion, that we then vote here tonight to take it out of reserves, because we know there's a couple $1 million that we just put in reserves. But that's to the higher powers to decide. I'm not going to amend it to do that. So I urge you to support this one limited amendment. Thank you.
Okay, we're only going to talk about the amendment now. Does anybody wish to be heard on this amendment that you see in the view graph? Why don't we start with Mr. O'Brien, then we'll go to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The width of that road is going to be constructed at 24 feet, which is adequate for two-way traffic. It is not recommended that we do engineering on the floor of town meeting in terms of specifically requiring things. Public safety will certainly look at this traffic flow after the design is done, just as the lights will be calibrated and timed, will be looked at. The road will be wide enough to adequately handle two-way traffic. In various meetings and discussion there, as I said earlier, there's been a tremendous amount of interest in having it be in a one-way direction. If you travel south quite often on Concord Road down into town center, coming from Nixon, let's say, down to Town Hall, then you very much would like to see that side road be one-way in your favor. On the other hand, if you travel from Wayland up and you need to go north, you would very much like to see it be one way in the other direction. So this will be looked at and studied. This was a schematic that was put together, just a diagram that was put together just to give people a sense of it. The width of the road will be there, and what is appropriate and adequate for traffic flow and safe passage for everyone is what will ultimately be decided.
Yes, sir. Could you stand up, please?
Lenny Simon, Meadowbrook Circle. We've heard from the professional engineers who have studied this proposal extensively and in detail and over a long period of time. Their presentation indicates that the one-way scheme be tried. I think that's appropriate. What we have had a presentation here is an evidence-based presentation and discussion with thought and an appropriate recommendation with fair funding. I would recommend that this hall vote against the amendment and approve the original article. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on the amendment? Could you stand, sir?
Dandy Pompey, Haynes Road. I just have a question for clarification. I asked the same question about the width of that road at the BOS meeting. And I believe my answer was the road was 19 feet wide, which would make it difficult for two-way traffic. I'd just like to confirm whether the width of that as planned is 24 or 19 feet. Thank you.
O'Brien?
I believe the answer that was provided was 21 feet at the Board of Selectmen meeting. Mr. Place is going to build it to 24 feet, and the reason for that is that adequately allows the 12 feet that's necessary for two lanes of traffic. And then if the decision is made to go bi-directional, the width will already be in place.
Okay. question has been called on the amendment. I don't think there's anyone else who wishes to speak. There is. How many people? One. Okay, this is the last one. We'll take that, and then we'll move on to the votes. Please stand.
Hi, my name is Terry Keeney, and I live at 71 Blueberry Hill Lane in Sudbury. And I support this intersection thing. It's an excellent idea. I'm against the one-way. I don't understand why we're making it one-way. We've got two-way now, and it works just fine. And yet we're going to one-way. Why are we doing that? I don't get it. I mean, there's a lot, I guess you guys know that I don't.
Again, as I've stated, coming out of the numerous public meetings, it was there seemed to be a significant interest in having the road be one direction. So in terms of the presentation for this evening, we used a drawing that had the arrow on it. But the two-way is going to be evaluated. Obviously, we've spent many minutes discussing it tonight. I think the town engineer and the public safety people know that, you know, this will be something that will be people will be looking to be examined.
Okay, I see your hand, sir, but I did say we'd take one more, so I have to take that call of the question. Let the hall decide. There's one more. There's a gentleman who'd like to speak for your consideration. So, although, does the call of the question receive a second? It does. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? That does not get two-thirds. Sir, can you stand up and speak after you get a mic?
Graham Taylor, 221 Goodman's Hill Road. I cannot understand why it was ever considered an acceptable one way. It sounds like the whole effort to improve time control is in effect. You've got to make it two way.
Okay. Yes, sir. The mic.
Jan Hardenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. The reason it was made one way is because one of the goals of the plan was to improve the civic nature of the town center, to make it a more inviting place for people to come. And if you shrink that roadway between the town common and the town center, you achieve that goal. During rush hour, there are only 24 cars that make that right and go up north. That's not very many cars, so the need for that is questionable. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard just on the amendment? I got it. Could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic over here, please?
Hi, my name is Aruna Pandit, and I live on 62 Ridge Hill Road. I was very excited that, you know, we were going to do something to change the traffic flow there, because I've been going back and forth, and they are like, you know, at 3 o'clock, at 6 o'clock, they are about, you know, the cars all the way from the traffic light to almost like near St. Elizabeth Church. So I thought maybe, you know, we were doing something, maybe making one more lane or something. So instead of that, it seems like we are more into beautification of things than instead of doing, you know, practical for the people who live on the town and have to go by it. So a little disappointed about that.
Mr. O'Brien? Was there a call of the question? Okay, is there a second to that? All those in favor of calling the question on the amendment, signify by raising your card. Those opposed? We will now vote on this. It's a majority vote. We're talking strictly about this amendment, not the main motion. All those in favor of the amendment, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? It is defeated by well more than a majority. We're now on the main motion. That question was called before I called on the gentleman who made the amendment. Does that receive a second? All those in favor, how many people would like to speak on the new motion, on the main motion, but for the call of the question? One, two. For the benefit of the hall, there's three people who would like to be heard. All those in favor, four people who would like to be heard. Too late. Four people would like to be heard. All those in favor of the call of the question, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. We will hear from those four people, starting with Mr. O'Brien, who has an answer to the question.
Part of the, to answer the question that was asked by Ms. Pundit a couple minutes ago, the issue at hand, and some people know this, some people do not, is that Town Center, as we affectionately call it, that little triangle between First Parish and Town Hall, is actually owned by First Parish. And the road by easement, Concord Road by easement, goes through what essentially was their grass area many, 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 many years ago. They also have their front lawn that comes down along the edge of Concord Road, as we all know. In numerous discussions and numerous renditions of the plan and looking at plans that included an additional turn lane, it would have cut into the front lawn of First Parish significantly, and they were not willing to grant an easement with that amount of change and impact on their front lawn. And there's people from First Parish that could speak more specifically to their reasoning. But based on that and based on the shifts that we were able to make in the alignment and everything else, we feel that we've come up in very tight quarters with the best possible alignment to increase traffic flow and public safety, along with all of the underground improvements that will come with it.
Okay, the other people wish to... Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Jan Hurtenberg, 7 Tippling Rock Road. So let me just start. This is a project about infrastructure and safety and a modest traffic flow increase. The SIAC report, which came out, studied this intensively. It's a 63-page report. It has 4 pages on just the traffic flow, 3 pages on the accident reports. So that's those are reports done by professionals, and I hope they will carry a lot of weight compared to just soundbite opinions. Here we go. Forward. The final report cited the visibility of the traffic signals turning into oncoming traffic and lane alignments as the traffic and safety issues. The report had a simplified plan that they did the traffic analysis of, and the simplified plan just involved aligning the lanes, forcing the not having people turn into oncoming traffic, and better traffic signals. So it's not exactly the same plan, but it's basically the same plan, and that would reduce the wait times during rush hour from 80 seconds to 55 seconds. It's not a miracle, but something. This is the before picture. Let me go one more. This is the after picture. So what's being added to the intersection are 2 stone walls. They'll be very similar to the stone wall that's already in front of Town Hall. There are the traffic islands. Those are needed for pedestrian safety. During the same 3-year period of study of the vehicle traffic, 3 pedestrians left the intersection in an ambulance. Those traffic islands will be planted. They'll be much better looking. There are more traffic poles there. Somehow in the past 50 years, the standards for the number of traffic poles you have so that you can see the traffic lights and the driver's cone of vision requires that there are more traffic poles. That number of traffic poles will be there under any sort of just fix the lights option. Should the town decide to ignore the drainage and the safety problems, we'll still have a lot of traffic poles. And we can all have opinions about what is and is not needed, but these plans were certified by an actual engineer. So. So we could have fewer poles if we had overhead the mast arms. Those are the lights that stick out over the intersection. There's a very strong negative reaction to those. And that's one of the design constraints.
Also, you have the original design goals for maintaining the historic character, improving the traffic flow, which will happen, and improving the traffic safety. Another design constraint is that First Parish is not willing to give up more of its lawn for a right turn lane. They've given up enough to make this project happen. To give up more lawn would be significant, and it would mean a 5-foot retaining wall in front of First Parish. So I hate to use the word never, but First Parish will never give up that land. There's not going to be another lane there. In 2010, the town presented two other plans which would have added another lane of traffic without cutting into the First Parish lawn. Those plans met with a very strong negative opinion. So minimal intersection was recommended to go forward. So given all those design constraints, this is the best plan we'll ever have. It does help the traffic flow. It increases the safety. So what we have here, a town center is a dichotomy. On the one hand, it's a bona fide historic gem. It's in the National Register of Historic Places. On the other hand, it's an overburdened crossroads of a surrounding network of back roads. This project will dramatically increase pedestrian safety. It will modestly increase traffic flow, and it will maintain the visual character and scale of the town center. Mr. Place and the selectmen have opted to only tax us for $700,000. That's because this needs to go to the voters, and this is a safety and infrastructure project. It's not a sexy project. We're not adding a hemi and tail fins to the intersection. So people aren't going to vote for that much. Just 2 cents.
Go ahead.
This project, the results of this project will benefit us for a long, long time. So please support this project.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, over there. Stand up, please.
Adrian Sheldon, Mill Pond Road. I used to drive through that intersection for years when I commuted to my last job. The lights do have something to be desired, I'll admit. But $700,000 in taxation, and I believe $1.7 million was the total bill, to me it seems like an absolute luxury that we can do without in these times. We're cutting money in schools. I mean, frankly, schools is what keeps our property values up. We've been laying off teachers for years. Every year it was, you know, cut, cut, cut. Other than lights, to me, this seems like we're buying 5 traffic islands for $1.7 million. Those are one doozy of traffic islands, apparently. I used to commute through that intersection for years. During rush hour, when I knew it was bad, I just went a different way. So I don't think that spending that much money to avoid sitting in traffic for a minute or two is warranted in these times. We have better things to spend our money on. I believe this is a luxury.
Okay, anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, ma'am. Oh, no, this ma'am.
Susan Litowitz, 199 Concord Road. I think I heard Jan refer to planting, and I just wanted to ask the question, are there going to be consideration for planting on the islands to sort of minimize the urban character and just to maintain a more natural or rural area?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, could you stand up, please?
John Baranowski, Belcher Drive. If you need the land from First Parish Church, why didn't you take it by eminent domain?
My understanding that it's not
that the town hardly ever takes anything by eminent domain against the wishes of the property owner. Is that an accurate statement? Mr. Dubinsky says that is accurate. Okay, anybody else? Are we ready for a vote? Yes, stand up, please. Can we get a mic to this gentleman?
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. Can you speak a little about traffic flow east-west on Route 27 with regard to making left turns north and south onto Concord Road? Is the intent that left turns will still be done simultaneously going in both directions, or are you going to change the lights so that only traffic from one direction will be going at a time? How is that going to work?
There will be a dedicated left turn lane east and west on Route 27 in that location.
A dedicated left lane going onto Concord Road heading west.
We'll get the drawing for you. We're going to put the drawing up. Does that answer your?
No. Right now,
yes.
People are making left turns going north and south.
Yes.
Simultaneously.
Yes.
It's a dangerous situation.
Yes.
Okay. I don't see that this does anything to alleviate that unless people going west are not going at the same time people are going east.
The advancement in lighting technology is going to contribute to that significantly, along with the lane alignment and the traffic islands and the markings. It's going to be clearly delineated where the turning lanes are, and the lights are going to be sequenced to take care of it.
Okay. Anyone else? Are we ready for a vote? I see no one else. So could you stand up, please? Thank you.
Mike Triano, Lincoln Road. I support this. I'm curious, when would the construction begin and approximately how long would it take?
Obviously, we have to wait for the vote on June 25th. After June 25th, there are other issues we have to do, is file with the Conservation Commission as a redevelopment project. That's going to take some time. We'll have to put this out to bid sometime in the fall. I will not allow construction after November 15th. My best guess, we'll probably see something starting this time next year, with hopefully completion sometime during the summer when children are away on vacation and there's less traffic in the area.
Anyone else? Okay. Back here. Could you stand, please?
Michael Light, 27 Middle Road. So I support this, but a quick question, and back to the no-name road, just for a brief minute. The gentleman mentioned 24 cars at peak time, not too many cars. I'm just wondering, was there any consideration, all due respect, to making that, like, paving that road with grass, basically, and beautifying the area, and not even having that no-name road there at all? Yeah, no, it's a little out there, but just wondering.
We did look at that, and we did have some discussion about actually closing off that area and being able to expand the green area known as Town Center so that the grass would come right up to the front steps. But in the end, it was decided that for truck turning and in the event of an accident and, you know, as a second access egress point, it would be best to keep it, although there has been discussion about maybe using a different surfacing so that it will be set apart and be more appealing to the general area. So if there was some sort of event on Town Green and it were to be closed off, it would be cosmetically more appealing, more aesthetically appealing.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Ready for a vote. This is the motion as you see it on the view graph. This is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? There's about 8 people opposed. The rest are in favor. It passes overwhelmingly. We're moving on to Article 20, which is the pilot agreement solar project at the landfill site. Mr. Braun, for a motion.
Move in the words of the article, Mr. Moderator.
Move in the words of the article. Does it receive a second? It does. Mr. Braun?
Yes, thank you. Bill Braun, 148
Closer to the mic, please.
Bill Braun, 148 North Road, Chairman of the Energy Committee. The argument for passage is pretty much as stated in the warrant. As you probably know, may have seen, we're in the process of building a 1.5-megawatt solar generating facility on the landfill adjacent to the transfer station under a power purchase agreement. Project is a key element of the mission that was given to the Energy Committee by the Board of Selectmen when the Energy Committee was established in 2009. And the present endeavor is the result of a fairly long-standing effort by that committee. Under the PPA, the developer installs, owns, operates, maintains, and ultimately decommissions the facility at its sole expense. Sudbury purchases electricity from the developer at preset rates and transmits that electricity to the grid and receives net metering credits in return for supplying that electricity to the grid. There's difference between the purchase price that we pay the developer for the electricity and the credit we get, the net metering credit we get, is about $120,000 per year, and about the value is about $3.6 million over the life of the contract. There's no cost to the town associated with the construction, operation, or maintenance or removal of the facility. So that's just a little primer, a little background on the solar generation facility. Actually, there's a picture up there. That's as of this morning. Remarkable progress being made. So at present, solar generating facilities on municipal property that are owned and operated by a taxable entity are considered by DOR, that's the Department of Revenue, to be subject to property tax, even if their operation is primarily for municipal purposes. In this situation, the municipality is in effect taxing itself, because any ongoing payments by the facility owner to the host municipality, that is by the developer to the town, are typically recovered in the price of the electricity charged. And usually in negotiating these electricity prices, there's a premium applied to that because of the uncertainty involved. The more uncertainty there is in the financial projections, the more of a buffer that's applied, and the higher the rates that need to cover any contingencies. We elected to negotiate this on a tax-neutral basis, that is to get the lowest possible electricity price, assuming that it would be tax-neutral to the developer. According to DOR guidance, a pilot, that is a payment in lieu of taxes, can be negotiated by a municipality as an alternative to personal property tax in these situations with approval of the town's governing body, that being town meeting, obviously. The benefits of a pilot are a known and constant expense to the facility owner, which results in a lower electricity price for the host municipality and obviously simplified administration. The alternative would be, in this case, to take the property tax, prorate that over the projected kilowatt hours of production, and then true it up. And there's a mismatch between the years of the period of operation and the property tax period. The production may exceed or fall short of the projection that goes into the allocation of the taxes per kilowatt hour, so it becomes administratively very complex and costly. The original goal of this project, as probably most of you know, was to generate electricity cost savings and do an environmentally responsible thing. And so in order to both meet that end and still comply with the tax code, we have negotiated a small pilot of $7,000 per year, subject, again, to a town meeting approval. The financial value to the town from the sale of the electricity and the resultant net metering credits far exceeds any prospective tax revenue. And the pilot, this is notable, does not add to the pre-tax electricity price. That is, we're not getting charged for those for that fee back in the electricity price. So it's a small additional benefit to the town over and above what we accrue by the production facility. So we respectfully ask for your support of this article.
Bob Stein for the Finance Committee.
FinCom unanimously supports it.
Larry O'Brien, Selectman.
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports, and we appreciate all of the work that's been done over the last few years by the Energy Committee, generating tremendous savings and benefit to the community.
Anyone wish to be heard on this article? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it's a unanimous vote. Thank you. We're on to Article 21. And is it Nancy Marshall? Chairperson of Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nancy Marshall for Lincoln Sudbury Regional School Committee. I move in the words of the article.
That received a second. It does. Ms. Marshall.
Thank you. Good evening. I am just going to basically follow on Bill's words with regard to the pilot. The pilot at LS is very much in line with the prior article presented by Bill. And to touch upon the basics of our pilot that are specific to the high school, our pilot agreement as written in the warrant will be in the amount of $5,000 between the town of Sudbury and SunEdison, the power purchase agreement provider for the contract. We've engaged with them and have completed a contract. SunEdison will construct, maintain, and operate the canopy at LS over the course of the 20-year contract. As you can see from the view graph, the array will be constructed as a canopy on the main parking lot at LS, with construction slated to commence upon the conclusion of the school year 2013. As a reference for folks, just to get a sense, the array will be similar to the REI canopy that's in their Natick store that is over their parking lot. The array is slightly smaller than the landfill. It's 1.268 megawatts. And we are also seeking approval at town meeting for the use of a pilot for a tax-neutral purpose of negotiation with SunEdison. And it will also provide the district with rate stability and, again, administrative simplicity. LS will consume all the power produced by the array on site. That is, the energy will be direct to LS or behind the meter. Power produced by the array will supply 50% of LS's energy needs on an annual basis. And as with the town landfill array, there will be no cost to LS for the construction, maintenance, or operation of the array. The approval of the pilot will provide regular annual payments by SunEdison to the town of Sudbury and will hold Lincoln Sudbury harmless and allow for energy cost savings to be fully realized by the district from this project. The pilot has been reviewed by the Sudbury Board of Selectmen, Sudbury Finance Committee, Sudbury Town Council, and by the school committee. And the signatories on the pilot will include the provider, SunEdison, the town of Sudbury, the Sudbury Board of Assessors, and our school committee. As Scott recognized last night, LS has been recognized as a lead green school in Massachusetts at the State House. That was recognized last week thanks to the efforts of the green team comprised of faculty, administrators, and students working together to reduce the district's carbon footprint through constant efforts to reduce energy consumption, recycling, reduction of consumables such as bottled water, and just general ongoing efforts to increase the awareness of green initiatives and possibilities for our building. So that really concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bob Stein.
FinCom unanimously supports it.
Selectman Larry O'Brien.
Board of Selectmen unanimously support, and again, we'd like to acknowledge and commend the Green Team efforts to make LS environmentally as friendly as possible.
Anyone wish to be heard on this article? Can you stand up, please?
Adrian Sheldon, Mill Pond Road. This solar array at the high school and the last one that we heard about at the landfill, fantastic. I'm thrilled to hear this. How soon would this be operational?
Well, it's somewhat pending ensuring that I think everything is in line in terms of staging. Jared, do you have a sense of timing? Okay, 4 to 6 months. It's in the connection process now, so 4 to 6 months it'll be up and running. The realized savings for the district, which was, I think, up on the view graph in the first year, will be $90,000.
Anyone else wish to be heard on this article? I see no one else. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It is a unanimous vote.
Thank you.
We're now on Article 22. Maureen Valente for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'll make the motion from here. I twisted my ankle a little earlier today. I'm moving the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Ms. Valente?
Thank you very much, Mr. Moderator. There is the explanation in the warrant, so I hope you all had a chance to take a look at that. For more background, the proposed revised capital bylaw that you see in the warrant has been developed working with the Capital Improvement Planning Committee members for some time. For several years, members have asked that the bylaw be amended. They have many concerns, among them wanting to focus on a better use of their time, skills, and energies to focus on the larger, more substantial projects facing the town. And they have asked for more guidance from the policymakers, the Board of Selectmen, the school committees, and the Finance Committee, on when the town will be focusing on and requesting the major capital projects that they've been aware of for some time. Capital Committee members have worked with department heads and school staff and heard about the major projects and the needs, and they have been eager to begin work on them. To meet this goal, this year we have developed two items. First, the Strategic Financial Planning Report. I hold it up again, and it is on the town website. For those for you to be able to consult and take a look at that, which encourages a multi-stakeholder ad hoc group to be created, again, working with the Selectmen, School Committees, Finance Committee, and the Capital Committee, to work together to create a framework for the future work of the Capital Committee. So that was step one, and then we developed this amended bylaw for town meeting to consider. Again, one item to note, this revised bylaw would allow the Capital Committee to participate on this ad hoc committee. The current bylaw does not. The bylaw change would change the focus of the Capital Committee away from the small $284,000 operating capital budget and allow them to place their focus on those larger projects that will need an article at town meeting to move forward. It does require the committee to make a report with those recommendations, but it leaves it to them to decide the multiple year, how many years in the future it would cover, as well as the due dates for projects. This is similar to the Community Preservation Committee, which is another group that looks at capital projects, and those items are not set in a bylaw. They set them for themselves to fit within the working project and schedule for town meeting. This amendment does include Lincoln Sudbury in the process, both as eligible to have smaller projects be considered for the capital budget and requires them then to submit their projects to the committee if they will need an article at town meeting to get the appropriated funds. Mr. Moderator, may I ask you to recognize Doug Cohen of the Finance Committee and a former member of the Capital Committee for the balance of presentation and comments on this proposed change.
Yes, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. My name is Doug Cohen. Robert Foster. I'm a member of the Finance Committee, had been on the Capital Improvement Planning Committee for 3 years prior to my time here. And I think I'm the only person who has any tenure on that committee within the last 5 or 6 years in the room. It was a lot of fun being on the committee. I got to get a tour of all of our rolling stock. I almost convinced Bill to let me take the bulldozer out for a try. I got to tour the police station. I got to tour the fire department. Our job on the CIPC was really split into two parts, the first being the operating capital budget. That's what Maureen Marianne presented yesterday in Eric Reese's absence. The majority of that budget is pretty straightforward. It's a $550,000, $600,000 budget, most of which goes towards paying down leases that we've already agreed to. The rest of the items are things like replacing a boiler in one of our buildings or replacing a truck on one of the rolling stock. They're very straightforward decisions. Occasionally, there would be an item such as the library RFID project, which would be a bigger ticket item that required a lot more research. And that was a pretty exciting part of the job. But the amount of work that we had to do as a committee and the amount of extra friction that we caused in the system with all of the town employees from approving this operating capital budget, which ended up being identical almost virtually to what was presented to us in the first place, it really became a disincentive for a lot of the members to want to continue on the committee, and it made it tough to recruit new members. Aside from the operating capital budget, we also then were involved in some of the larger projects. The town center traffic improvements were put before us. The police station was put before us. The Fairbanks roof. And not that our vote would, you know, mean that it would move forward or not, but oftentimes the proponents of each of these projects would use the CIPC as a sounding board before bringing it to the town to get an understanding of what the objections might be, to start refining their assumptions. And in some cases, projects weren't brought forth to the town. Another minute?
Was that 10? No, that was only 5. Go ahead.
Okay. Such as the improvements to the fire department outstations, stations 2 and 3. They brought those in front of the Capital Improvement Planning Committee. We didn't think that they made sense, and the proponents decided not to bring them in front of town meeting. So the changes proposed to these bylaws, I think especially in light of what's happened over the last few months with the CIPC and the police station, make a lot of sense to me. I think that the current bylaws often can be sand in the gears, and they have many unintended consequences. So I fully support what Maureen is proposing for the changes to these bylaws. I think it will enable the committee to really focus on those bigger projects and be that sounding board to the selectmen and to the town employees as they bring forth projects. But it will also then enable us to have the flexibility for when a project comes up like the roof on Nixon, and there's a limited time frame to act in order to get certain funding. It enables us to do that because it would be a real shame to not take advantage of several hundred thousand dollars of funding available for a roof project that came up rather quickly outside of the scope of these bylaws because we have bylaws in place that prevent it. I think one of the objections that I could potentially see someone having is that it removes a set of checks and balances, but the reality is that for the operating capital budget, with the exception of those larger ticket items, that it was very straightforward. I mean, it was replacing a truck when a truck needed to be replaced, replacing a boiler when a boiler needed to be replaced. So I would strongly encourage you to support these bylaw changes. If there are amendments that try to bring it back to the original bylaw that's in place with some slight modifications, I don't think that's going to get us there. I think that, as we saw with some of the questions about the CIPC bylaw and how and whether it was followed this year, I think that in this case, has served to get in the way of potentially putting forward good policies and good programs. So I fully support this amendment.
Finance Committee, Chuck Woodard.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
Larry O'Brien, Selectman.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article. We recognize that we're going to continue looking at it and continue working with it over the upcoming year, and We anticipate that should it need some tweaking and improvement, we would bring it back as a living, breathing document next year for those changes and improvements that we might find as we review it further over the course of the next year.
Marian Milledew, ex officio on the CIPC. They have a position?
Yes, I actually have a statement to read from the committee and on their behalf. The CIPC has discussed this proposal at length and unanimously supports it and recommends town meeting approve it. The committee believes that operating under the new bylaw will enable it to spend more of its time on projects of greater importance to the town and focus in greater depth on long-term capital issues facing the town.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 22? Yes. Can we get a mic over here, please?
Pat Brown, 34 Whispering Pine Road. There's a lot to like in this article. There's a lot I do like in this article. I think that a $50,000 limit on capital expenses for 1 year as opposed to $10,000 makes perfect sense. I think a six-member board appointed by the BOS as opposed to having three members by the BOS and three members by the town manager, that makes sense. Including Lincoln Sudbury and capital planning makes sense. Absolutely taking citizen volunteers and burning their time coming up with a $284,000 capital operating budget is not a good use of their time. That's something the town manager should do, and that's the way it is in the article. Letting these people be members of ad hoc committees, that's a good idea, too. The place where I have my problem is that there's no real reporting required by the committee. They come up with a report. It's not an annual report. It's a report. And it doesn't require any particular information. The current bylaw says you provide your information on forms provided by us, which says that for every project providing information, you're providing the same information. It's possible to compare projects. When you simply have proponents coming in presenting their projects, that's harder to do. So I absolutely, fully, completely believe that the Capital Improvement Planning Committee should not be spending their time deciding whether to renew leases that we're going to renew. But I absolutely do think that there should be a much stronger focus on using citizen input for prioritizing capital projects than there is in the bylaws that's written. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 22? Yes, sir.
Andy McIntyre, Brookdale Road. Well, I'd like to start off by saying the bylaw was implemented through an enabling statute by Mass General Law, and among other things, it said the town at its annual meeting may, by a bylaw, establish a capital planning committee. The committee shall annually review the capital improvement program, if any, and proposals for municipal buildings, and make recommendations to the appropriate agency. Next slide. This is the general bylaw, the enabling statute here. Next, MGL 41, Section 106B, not that we care, but just to show it to you. Next. Next slide. Can you get to the next slide? All right, yes. Another part of the statute is that any vacancy occurring shall be filled for the unexpired term in the same manner as the original appointment. And next slide. And one of the big problems, and this is the CIPC minutes of November 14th, Town Manager Valenti, Town's Selectman O'Brien addressed the committees back.
Both Maureen and Larry stated that they don't intend to appoint the two new members for 3-year terms because it doesn't make sense since they have recommended this bylaw change. This is before the bylaw came into part. And the big thing about this bylaw, it needs the support of the town, and we just haven't had it. Next slide, please. CIPC actually pushed back and said, we voted to appoint the full 7 members of the committee. This recommendation was made understanding and recognizing that the bylaw may be changed, but it would change the makeup and mission of the committee, but it would enable us to be in compliance with the existing bylaw. So essentially, we're out of compliance with the bylaw by not having 2 out of our 7 members appointed. Next slide. Now, not only do we have an enabling statute, but this bylaw was implemented through mass guidelines. Next slide, please. These are the guidelines here. Developing. Can you get there? Next slide. No, next slide, please. All right, so this is developing a capital improvement program, and you can see it's step by step is what is involved in. So it's a very involved process here. And my point is we're changing this here. Next slide, please. So what is a capital improvement program based on the bylaw? It's the blueprint for community planning our community's capital expenditures. It's actually one of the most important responsibilities that we have. Next slide, please. There's 2 parts of the bylaw. Capital budget, which is what we've been talking about, the up year, this coming year capital expenditures, originally is $10,000, but that's a template. There's no problem with adjusting it to $50,000. The other big part of the bylaw is the capital program. That's the expenditures that extend 5 years beyond the capital budget. Next slide. Okay. The new bylaw capital improvement program has no mention of this 5-year look ahead. So in other words, the idea of the 5-year look ahead is not in our new bylaw at all. Next slide. Now, the benefits of a properly developed capital improvement program is that it keeps the public informed about future needs and projects, encourages careful planning and design to avoid costly mistakes. And, you know, full disclosure, I thought the bylaw was mangled for the police station, but I voted for it in this case here based on the needs of the community. But the bylaw I thought was mangled. So why replace the current bylaw? And this is right from the Board of Selectmen's report. Next slide there. We're going to address the shortcomings that have proved difficult. And then let's just look at some quick history here. We adopted this in 1998. And the whole idea was this bylaw would unify the capital process and provide legitimacy for serious capital planning. In other words, this is the quote from town meeting in 98. Town's capital planning efforts are disjointed. This is going to replace the long-range planning committee. It doesn't have full authority. This bylaw gives it. And FinCom Investment Priorities Committee, this bylaw replaced. We also, next slide, in 2001, we actually built our DPW facility under this bylaw. David Wallace was chair of the Capital Improvement Committee. Ms. Rupenian was the BOS chair at that time. The next slide. We also used the bylaw in 2007 to construct the police station. It didn't go through, but again, the bylaw was there and it was working.
How much longer?
2 minutes, please.
All those in favor of giving Mr. Magny 2 minutes, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? Go ahead, Mr. Magny.
Thank you. So should we replace the current bylaw? All we have to do, this next slide, is it's a one-line sentence. You know, we're worried about CIPC members can't serve on hack boards. Change it. Next slide, you can see it's changed. One sentence change in the current bylaw. I'm going 1 through 4, which is what is in the warrant, the problems with it. Number 2, specific due date, October 1st. Again, change it. Next slide. And you'll see one little, you know, in fact, in the original template, it was open, and town meeting is the one that voted for October 1st. Same with that $10,000. It was part of the original template. Town meeting said $10,000. So just change it to $50,000. We shouldn't redo the whole bylaw here. Again, let's skip the current bylaw here. Chairman O'Brien in 2010 Article 6 changed a bunch of dates, and we didn't even touch this bylaw, supposedly the most important bylaw that we had just about for CIPC, and we didn't change the dates if we thought they were important. Let's skip the bylaw about anticipation here. Another thing we have to do is put in ex officio officers. Right now, finance director, all we have to do is add the facilities director. The current bylaw talks about the idea that here's what we should do, and right in it now, shall consider relative need, timing, cost of expenditures, inventory access, prioritize capital requests, develop a financing strategy. Next slide. Right now, all the bylaw does is two things. Committee shall study proposals from town manager, SPSLS, shall make a report with recommendations. That's it. We're stripping out our current bylaw and essentially giving the power back to the town manager, and it really belongs with the committee. Again, all we need to do is one line and put an LS in there. And the other thing we're stripping out is the Section 4, which is the enforcement, which basically says no appropriations unless it went through this capital committee, and that those are all gone. So I would think that just with slight changes to our existing bylaw, we could get it done. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, yes, yes. Stand up, please. Way back.
Brian Temple, 15 Revere Road. So we had a review session prior to the town meeting with the Board of Selectmen over two different nights. This article was not vetted during either of those two nights, and so we did not have a chance to dig into it and ask the questions on it. And so I think some of the concerns that are being raised tonight, perhaps we could have dealt with then. But that's more data for the hall as you make your decision. Thanks.
Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, could you stand up, please? Can we get a mic there?
So I'd like to echo and Mike Triano, Lincoln Road. Fixes a lot of practical problems with the current bylaw, and Pat listed those, enumerated them. I agree with everything she said. The bad is that it does transfer some power from a body that has some constraints directly into the hands of the town manager. Again, no value judgment here, but that seems short-sighted and expedient in the worst possible way. And the ugly part is I think revealed in some of the debate over the police station. The challenge with capital investments is they can't be evaluated in a vacuum. The allocation of capital from the town has to be evaluated in its entirety. We have to be able to look at Project A versus Project B rather than making absolute decisions about anything in isolation of other priorities. And having a capital planning committee that is specifically set up to evaluate capital spending in context of other capital requirements, while you know, practically challenging in some ways. I know maybe the October 1 date is wrong, but it seems like an essential discipline if we're going to make informed choices about how to allocate what at the end of the day is finite amount of capital for the town.
Anyone else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, please stand.
Berdowski, Belcher Drive. Can someone explain why it wasn't vetted, Article 22? I went to both of those sessions, and I noticed the same thing that other commentators have mentioned, that kind of just skipped right over that one. I think we see that skipping over it has had, unintended consequences. So I'd like an answer.
Mr. O'Brien?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The article actually was discussed not at the two meetings that Mr. Baranowski, Mr. Semple, and others attended, but at the meeting just prior to that when we discussed the strategic financial plan. That was a joint meeting of the Capital Planning Committee, the Finance Committee, the LS School Committee, the SPS School Committee, and the Board of Selectmen. This article was discussed. There was public, it was an open meeting. There was some public attendance at that meeting, and there was overall support for the article and the changes that are recommended.
Anybody else wish to be heard before we vote on this article? I see no one. Can we move in the words of the article? So this is a majority vote. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. All those opposed? Let's try that one more time. I'm pretty sure it's well more than majority, but let's try it again. Please, those in favor, stand and raise your cards. Thank you. Actually, I take that back. You may be seated. Keep raising your cards. It's easier to count when you're sitting down in this room. So if you're in favor of this motion, raise your cards. Thank you very much. All those opposed signify by raising your cards. Thank you very much. It passes by well more than a majority. We're now going to move on to Article 23. LS, we have someone from LS to make this motion.
Moderator, on behalf of the school committee at LS, I move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second?
Prior vote.
Indefinitely postpone. It does receive a second. Can you just tell us why?
The article that we put forward was pending the prior article not passing. It was to ensure that Lincoln Sudbury was to have inclusion in the process for capital planning in Sudbury, in accordance with what we've been doing with the town for strategic planning on capital needs for the cost centers. That's no longer necessary through our article, as LS was mentioned in the prior article.
Finance Committee wish to be heard?
No.
No. Selectmen wish to be heard?
We support the IP.
Support the IP. Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. It's a majority vote. Those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're now on Article 24. Do we have a motion by someone? Please. Just name and address for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'm Ed Lewis, 28 Revolutionary Road. I am one of the founding members of the Sudbury Energy Committee, and I'm speaking on their behalf on this article tonight. The Energy and Sustainability Green Ribbon Committee recommends that the motion 24 be indefinitely postponed.
So move to indefinitely postpone?
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second? It does.
Thank you.
You want to tell us why?
Yeah. It's only half of Gettysburg, don't worry. Article 24 relates to an energy savings performance contract, which will allow Sudbury to implement energy and maintenance saving capital improvement projects for town and school buildings.
This is being developed under a Metropolitan Area Planning Council regional contract, and it utilizes Mass General Law Section 25A for procurement. With Section 25A procurement, it absolutely requires that any of the energy and maintenance savings improvements pay for themselves, so that it is fully self-funding. There will be no net cost to Sudbury taxpayers. These projects require a lot of engineering. The Energy Committee and the town personnel are currently reviewing some investment-grade audits, which have been done on our municipal and our school buildings, and after those have been reviewed and understood, we do expect to come back with specific recommendations at a later date. Thank you.
Finance Committee, have an opinion?
We do not have an opinion.
Selectman?
Selectman support indefinite postponement.
Anybody wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone? I see no one. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously.
Thank you.
We're moving to Article 25. Do we have a motion? We do.
All right, David Levington, 155 Knobscot Road, for the Council on Aging. Move in the words of the article.
Does it receive a second? It does. Mr. Levington?
These two sections of our bylaw were adopted in the 1990s, late 90s. Before that, we had no condominiums in town. And all the over 55 condominiums in town were built under these bylaws. They've been very successful for the town. Look. We now have 191 over 55 condos in town. $86 million of assessed value. And no children, paying $1.5 million in property taxes this year. Now, to give you some idea of that $86 million, all of the commercial and industrial property in town in total is about $200 million. So in 10 years, we've built $80 million worth of property in town that supports the town, pays taxes, and has very low expenses. So if it's so good, why do we want to change it? We want to amend it. The Council on Aging looked at who moved into these units, and we found something quite interesting. The market rate units, which is everything except Frost Farm, is only about 20 to 25% Sudbury residents. Now, that's not good or bad. The fact that 75% of the units are attracting families from the Metro West area, from other towns, says something very good about our community, that this is a great place to live, even for people with no children. But if you look at the difference, at Frost Farm, over half are our own residents. Now, Frost Farm, you may know, has had a troubled history in our town, but at the moment, it's a thriving, successful place. We have of almost 50 families living there and enjoying it. And over half are from Sudbury. Now, the lesson here is that we have people in town who can't afford our market rate units and would like to stay. This change in the bylaw will make that more likely. It will enable builders to include more one-bedroom units in their condominium developments. One-bedroom units are about 25, 30% smaller than two-bedroom units, and consequently less expensive. So if you will approve this change in the bylaw, it may help more of our less affluent seniors stay in town. Thank you.
Bob Jacobson for the Finance Committee.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Larry O'Brien, Selectman.
Unanimous support keeping seniors in town and making more affordable opportunities at market rate units available is a high priority for the Board of Selectmen.
And then we have to hear from the Planning Board because this is a zoning article.
Supports this. Planning Board unanimously supports this article.
And just for the record, could we have your name, please, and address?
Michael Fee, Chairman of the Planning Board.
Thank you. And we ask the Board of Selectmen, anybody wish to be heard on this article? I see no one.
This is a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of the motion, as appeared in the viewgraph, signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes unanimously. If we can get one more in. Article 26.
Pat Brown for the Planning Board. Move in the words of the article.
Does it receive a second? It does. Ms. Brown?
The Sudbury Zoning Bylaw requires a unanimous vote by the Board of Selectmen to approve a site plan. We think this should be amended to a majority vote for two reasons. Number one, Sudbury has approved an increase in the Board of Selectmen from 3 members to 5. Requiring a unanimous opinion from 5 selectmen is onerous to the applicant. Number two, site plan review is a way for the governing body to request changes during the planning process that they believe would benefit the community. Failure to approve a site plan does not have the authority to deny a plan otherwise allowed under the zoning bylaw. A site plan review is a request, not a requirement for changes. There's no reason to require unanimous agreement for site plan review, which is advisory only. Thank you.
Finance Committee, Bob Jacobson.
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Bob Hardy, Selectman.
The Board of Selectmen support this article.
Anybody wish to be heard on this article? Yes, sir. Could you stand up?
Brian Semple, 15 Revere. Just a quick question. There's been some contentious 2-to-1 votes on, I think, on some of the site plan procedures over the last year or two. Does this thing take effect if we approve it tomorrow? Because theoretically, we don't have 5 selectmen until the end of June. And do we care about that?
Well, I believe in subject to town council's.
So in other words, there's a gap between when we have 5 selectmen
Correct.
And when we agree with this. Do we
Correct.
Care?
It actually will. What happens is every zoning article goes to the Attorney General's office to approve. That can take several months. By the time they finished approving it, my guess is that June 25th will pass and we'll know who the 2 new selectmen are. But it's retroactively effective at the end of town meeting. But again, the Assistant Attorney General has to prove it first. Is that correct, Mr. Town Council? What a good guess. Anybody else wish to be heard on this article? Yes, sir. Can we get a mic over here in front? Can we get a mic from over there? Just come around front. Thank you.
Great. Craig Blake, 300 Old Lancaster Road. Just have a question. It says a majority. If you have a 5-man board, 5-person board, and one is recused for one condition or another, how do you get a majority?
Majority would still be 3.
What if it's a 2-2 vote?
It does not pass. Anybody else on Article 26? Yes, sir.
Point of clarification, Mr. Moderator. Did I hear you say that, in response to the earlier question, that that when the Attorney General's office approves it, it applies retroactively, which means that, in fact, votes taken by the current Board of Selectmen between now and the time that the new board is installed would, at that point in the future, be made retroactively effective? Is that what I heard you say?
That's correct.
So the answer that's probably not the answer to the question that the previous gentleman thought he was going to get. It's not that June 25th will have come and gone, and therefore we don't have to worry about votes taken between now and then. But it says that votes taken between now and then will be subject to the new bylaw once the Attorney General has approved it. Is that?
Correct.
I think even if it does apply to the current board, I think the questioner's question was, do we really care? And we don't, for a couple of reasons. I think we don't have any current site plans on the agenda, but if we did, and if it was a three-member board, and two of them were in favor and one was opposed, it would be a majority, and we would be okay with that.
With all respect, I don't believe his question was, does the Board of Selectmen care?
Okay. Anybody else wish to be heard on this article before we vote? Did someone? Yes, could you stand up so we can the Boy Scout can see you?
Sid Bourne, Northwood Drive. Question. Did the Board of Selectmen vote unanimously to approve this, or was it a 2-1 vote?
Bob?
It was unanimous.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to be heard on this before we vote? I see no one else. All those, and this is, again, a 2/3 vote. All those in favor of the motion on the view graph signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes by well more than a 2/3 vote. May I have a motion either to adjourn or to continue? Yes, sir.
Move to adjourn until 7:30 tomorrow.
Is there a second? It is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed, it passes. Thank you all very much. See you tomorrow. Thank you.